All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another Gymfear 138 podcast. Before we get into anything at all, I'm doing this more and more frequently nowadays. I'm not sure why. My review of War Demons by Russell Newquist is up. Russell's a buddy of mine. I talk to him on Twitter fairly frequently, at least. And he gave me a copy of that book to read and review, and I finally got the fucking thing up. And there are links to where you can read the review in the description of this podcast, and there are links within the post that I'm linking where you can go and find the book. It's very good shit. It's the best urban fantasy I've read since Jim Butcher. That is not any kind of lie or exaggeration or anything like that. I haven't had this much fun with an urban fantasy novel in particular since Stormfront by Jim Butcher, which is the first book in the Dresden Files series. And it's actually the only Jim Butcher book I've read, but I really want to read his other stuff because Stormfront was really good. I've got the first three books in the Dresden Files around here somewhere. I just haven't actually, you know, sat down and read the goddamn things yet. So, yeah, go check out the review. Go check out Russell's book. Apparently, I've got a couple of people to buy it already. There's one guy on Minds told me he would buy it. A couple of people on Twitter said that they would look into it. I think there was one guy who commented on the website, too, but I can't recall. But I hope they do, and I hope they enjoy it, because it's a very good book. I enjoyed it immensely. I had a lot of fucking fun with it. When I actually, you know, found time to sit down and read it, I couldn't put it down. I would... it was like reading Ethereal again. You know, I would carry it around with me, and my eyes would be glued to the fucking Kindle. Sorry, again, if I sound a little bit out of it. I took a night off last night because I got a hold of a copy of Cuphead, and it is a really good game, guys. Like, really good. But I want to talk about that later. I'm just, like, if I sound weird, it's because Cuphead is difficult, and I was stressing about that. I'm trying to get more zen about it, you know, because, fuck it. We'll go ahead and talk about it now. Cuphead is a run-and-gun platformer shooter like Contra. So if you ever played Contra on the original NES, or like the G.I. Joe game, Bayou Billy, let's see, what was another? Ghosts and Goblins, something like that. If you've ever played any of those games, Contra is the most similar, though. It's basically like Contra if Contra were almost nothing but boss fights. That's kind of the draw of this game, is it's like a Shadow of the Colossus-style game, where most of the levels that you go through are just big fucking boss fights. And, you know, from start of the match to the end of the match, barely any of them go over 2 minutes. But you might be there for a half fucking hour on one level because it's just not easy. I was several times. This game has kicked my ass. I'm up to world 3. I'm doing good. I got up to world 3. I played it a little bit more today. And I'm almost done with world 3. And I've probably died like 400 times or had to restart the match. Because I'm one of those guys who, if I get into a situation where I have like, I'm able to be hit 4 times and on the 4th hit I die, then I like to preserve as many of my health points as I can until the very end of the fight when shit goes completely insane, because I know I'm going to have trouble getting through it if I don't have a couple of health points to throw away. So I'll sit there and I'll memorize the first like 3 rounds of the boss fight, and then die by accident, and then come back at the very end, and then after like 15 or 20 tries, I'll actually get through it. So I'm not good at Cuphead, guys. Darkside Phil is better at this game than I am, but it is a lot of fun, and it is so worth the $20, guys. I think it's on Steam and GOG, good old games, GOG.com. And I highly recommend you guys go and pick this up, unless you're a whiny little faggot like the game journos. Because this has been... I feel so bad for the Cuphead dev team, because they crafted an amazing game. The music is great, the voice acting is pretty fucking good. It sounds like, you know, a recording from old radio. The graphics are fucking awesome. It looks like, you know, hand-drawn cartoons from the 30s. The controls are tight as fuck, too. If you missed a jump, it's your fault. You were not good enough to make the jump. or you miscalculated, or something like that. It is not the control's fault. The hitboxes are all nice and tight, so if you do fuck something up and get hit, once again, it's your fault. You jumped too soon, or you jumped too late, or you didn't duck, or something like that. It's just, it's such a tight game, and I love it so much, despite the fact that I'm utterly shit at it. And I feel so bad for the dev team, man, because they included an easy mode. There's an easy mode on this. I have not played it because I'm not a pussy. It only has easy and regular. So there's the real game, and then there's a toned down mode for if you want to take it slow. Which, hey, fine. You know, I'm more than okay with that. It doesn't bother me at all if, you know, certain people don't want as much of a challenge as the regular game, because the regular game is pretty fucking challenging. Like I say, I've probably died like 400 times. I'm worse at this game than Appabend, who is a YouTuber who comments on like video games and comics and some social justice shit. Appabend is really cool. I enjoy his videos a lot. But he died like 413 times over the course of this game. I haven't even beat the fucking thing yet. But it's kind of useful and as a exercise in Zen, because it has infinite lives. Like, that's the big difference. It's like Contra if you have infinite lives, which kind of defeats the purpose, but this game isn't built on an arcade mode where the game was originally in an arcade machine where you got more lives by putting quarters into the machine, and then they just ported it with no change over to a home console. And, you know, it's still based on you either earning extra lives in the game or putting quarters in the machine. And on a NES, you can't put quarters in the machine. You know, you can do shit with ROM hacks and play Contra and have infinite lives. And I assume that the Contra code still works in ROMs, in emulators, but, you know, Cuphead just is not designed that way. So you have literally as many lives as you need to get through this fucking game. You really do. It's not that hard. I mean, it's hard, but it's not that hard. You know, you can just sit there until you memorize the attack patterns, and then all you have to do is react to them, put yourself in the right place at the right time, and then, you know, keep fighting the boss. It's really not that hard. And sometimes you have to go and change equipment and shit like that, which I learned that the hard way. I didn't know that there was a tracer round. Well, not a tracer round, homing round. That's it, a homing round. In this game, until I watched Turd Flinging Monkey's last podcast where he played it, and he was using the homing round, and I was like, oh shit, I gotta get that, because, you know, I was playing Cuphead while watching him, you know, talk to guests and play Cuphead. I was like, I gotta get that fucking homing round, because that would make this shit a whole lot easier. And it does. It does. But they got the regular gun, they got the charge rounds, they got homing rounds, they got a multi, you know, a spray kind of shotgun style gun. You know, all kinds of shit. Big super moves. You can become invincible. You can do this gigantic energy beam. And it's really helpful, too. Like, you're meant to use all of this stuff. If you can figure out a good combination that works for you, then, you know, you'll have an easier time in the game rather than just going through it with the pea shooter. So, yeah. Cuphead. Highly recommended. Awesome fucking game. Absolutely worth. I thought, like, I've been looking forward to this game for months. And I thought it looked fucking awesome. The test footage that we saw and, like, the demo and everything like that, it looked really fucking cool. It looked right up my alley, despite the fact that it's a little bit bullet hell. I'm not a big fan of bullet hell games, but in this instance, it has, like, platforming sections, which I think are too few and far between for the actual game, because the platforming levels are the most fun, in my opinion, where you just, like, run from one end of the level to the other, like you did in old-school Super Mario Brothers, or in Contra. You just run from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen until you reach the end point of the level. In the boss fights, they're either set in a room or in moving scenery, where you stay in this little box and you dodge the boss's attacks, and, you know, you shoot back and try to work out a strategy to beat the boss, and the boss has multiple stages to the fights. And I'd been looking forward to this for months and months, and it's everything I hoped it would be. It's great. Congrats to the devs of Cuphead. Go buy the game. But the game journos, on the other hand, fucking smarmy, smug-ass pricks. I released a post today, on Thursday, I'm recording this on Thursday, about how game journos just do not understand video games. Because there was an article that came out on Rock, Paper, Shotgun by some smarmy, pretentious fucking wanker. John Walker, that's his name. I have no idea if that's his real name, but That's what he's listed as. Where he wants to be able to skip boss fights and combat, because Assassin's Creed, Ass Creed Origins, I want to say, not Unity, Origins, the one in Egypt. I haven't kept up with Assassin's Creed since the second game. It just started to get repetitive and stupid. But in the new Assassin's Creed game, they're putting in a tourist mode, which doesn't actually advance the game. So if you want to advance the game, then you have to go through and do the combat. You know, you can't just sit there and see the story, but if you want to walk around and take a look at their recreation of ancient Egypt, you can do it. That's basically all that's there for. Like I say, Appabend has a good video on it. I think it's called Peak Suck. Like P-E-A-C-S-U-C-C. Peak Suck. If I can find it, I'll link it in the description, because it's really fucking funny. He reams this game journo about just, like, bitching over how hard Cuphead is, and it's, oh god, why, we should be able to, it's the same article that I went down, in this post. We should be able to skip combat and boss fights, and gamers should go hip hip hooray at all of this. They should love the addition of combatless games. Motherfucker, you're not a gamer, okay? Don't you sit there and tell gamers what they should want. That is not your fucking place. You're a game journalist. Your job, your entire job, the whole of your fucking job is to play video games and tell us whether you think they're good or not. And to do that, you need to demonstrate a certain level of competency with video games. If you are going to sit there and tell me that video games should have tourist modes, all games should have combatless modes where there is no challenge and you're just given everything, which turns the experience into another walking simulator, which turns it into a fucking, basically an interactive movie where you have no control over what happens. Go play a visual novel, bitch! You should not be a game journalist, dude. And don't tell me what I should fucking think about any goddamn thing. Especially since all you fucking people have done is degrade and deride Cuphead since it came out. Meanwhile, every single gamer I've heard of that's played the game fucking loves it. Including me. Including people like me who suck at it. I've never been good at games like Contra. But I like playing them because they're fun. Because there's a challenge. If there wasn't a challenge, there wouldn't be any fucking point, would there? Which serves to undergird the point that Gamergate has been talking about for 3 fucking years now, because these people won't let it die. Most of the people in Gamergate walked away. They're just fine, like, we're gonna walk away, we're keeping an eye on you, but we're not doing the whole Gamergate thing anymore. We're not calling ourselves Gamergate. You know, we're not doing the I am the leader of Gamergate and so can you, you know, I am Spartacus shit. We're just watching you. Ready to come out of the shadows, like a vampire, the unkillable undead thing that is Gamergate. No, it's just, because it was gamers. We've always been here, dude, and we always will. You can't fucking get rid of us, okay? This is our hobby. We built it. We paid the money to build it, over decades. You know, we suffered the slings and arrows of the Chads and the Stacys, who called us fucking nerds in middle school and elementary school for liking video games. And then, shit upon shit, video games get fucking popular. Then suddenly everybody's a fucking video game, you know, player. Not a gamer. Gamers are dead, and gamers don't have to be your audience. Fuck you. Yes, I'm still salty about that. Especially when I saw people like, who's the faggot that used to be on X-Play? Adam Sessler. That's his name. Adam Sessler. I used to respect him. I enjoyed X-Play. X-Play was one of my favorite shows. I would come home every day from school and I would watch, like, Digimon and Power Rangers and X-Play. That was one of those shows that I would watch every day when I got home because I liked the skits that they did. I liked their video game reviews. They were fun, they were funny, and, you know, they were pretty honest, too. But then all this Gamergate shit happened and Adam Sessler had to go full prog on us. And that wasn't fun for anybody. I don't know, maybe it's fun for him. Not fun for us. We used to like you, dude. We used to respect you. Then you turned on us. But the entire point of video games since Pong, the fucking 70s, has been reward through challenge. You beat the game. Congratulations. And yeah, it doesn't mean anything in the real world, okay? I'm not gonna beat Cuphead, and people are gonna go, oh, you're awesome, you beat that game, you know? I beat video games all the fucking time. Nobody claps. There's no fanfare. There's no nothing. And I don't expect there to be. That's stupid. I just like playing the game. I like the challenge. It's a little personal thing to me and to millions of other people who play video games, you know? Oh, this game was really hard, but I beat it. I stuck with it. I persevered. I applied the lessons that the game taught me. And with a little bit of luck, I fucking made it through. That's part of the entire point of video games. Now, you can have games like visual novels and stuff like that where you just sit there and click through dialogue, but they're not fun. Or not really, anyway. Like, Sakura Dungeon is okay because it's got, like, a little dungeon crawler thing attached to the visual novel. And the dungeon crawler is actually pretty fun. But then I went and played, like, one of the other games in that pack. I think it was Sakura Agent. And it just, like, I got, like, 15 minutes into this game and, like, a battle happened. And I didn't get to see the battle. It was, oh, they're attacking! The aliens are attacking! That's one of the plots in there. Oh, there are aliens attacking. And, you know, you and these two sexy girls are going to save the Earth. But it's not about y'all going and saving the Earth. It's about the relationships between the characters and the dialogue and, you know, the general war and everything like that. So a battle happened in this game in, like, the first 15 minutes, and they just, like, glossed over it. Like, you didn't get to see any combat. There was none of that. Nothing. It was just them reacting to what the aliens were doing. It was like watching an anime, except I have to click through all of the dialogue. It just wasn't fun to play, so I quit, despite the copious amounts of titty in them games. It just, the titty wasn't enough, man. The titty wasn't enough to keep me coming back. But most gamers don't find that shit fun. That's why games like Gone Home got panned, because it was boring. I bought Gone Home. I played it. I bought it on sale. I did not pay full price for that fucking game. I paid like $5, and I still overpaid. I wouldn't pay, like, looking back on that game, I wouldn't pay, like, trying to think of what I would actually give to play Gone Home. Like, is there anything that I would actually sacrifice? Because that's what purchasing is, you know? Cuphead means more to me, or is worth the $20 that I paid for it. Gone Home is not. It's, like, I paid less for that than I did for most of the games that I own. And it still costs too much. It was boring, you know? It was really fucking boring. Says, oh, we're gonna go through this house and, you know, read your sister's diary. Oh, she's a lesbian. Oh, and mom is working with, like, the fire service, and dad released a novel or something. I don't fucking remember. It's been, like, 2 years since I fucking played that game. I played it once. I put, like, 2 hours of my life into this game, and I want that time back, man. I wasted it. That was wasted time playing a bit. Like, people talk about, oh, video games are just a waste of time. I disagree. Except in the case of Gone Home. Gone Home is a waste of fucking time. It really is. Because there's nothing to do. Like, okay, yeah, it looks kind of pretty. Like, the graphics aren't that bad. That's about the nicest thing you can say for it. It's not even that well written. You know, and you can actually beat the game in, like, what was it? I think somebody did a speed run of Gone Home and beat it in, like, 45 seconds. It was fucking ridiculous. Like, you get inside, and then you go and find this one thing, and then you go up into the attic and see the thing in the attic, and game over. And the thing in the attic is just, like, your sister's notebook, where she's like, me and my girlfriend are gonna defect from the military and run off into the night, and that's the end of the fucking game. You literally can beat it in under a minute. I actually went through and explored the game, because I paid, like, $5 for this thing, so I might as well see what all it has to offer. It's a competent walking simulator. Like, if they did something like Amnesia with it, then it would actually be fun to play. Amnesia's a fun game to play because, you know, it's not just walking around this castle. You actually have to solve puzzles and, well, you don't fight monsters, you hide from them. But, you know, it's still fun. It's still scary. It's a good thriller. Definitely not the best horror game I've ever played by any fucking stretch of the imagination. That goes to Silent Hill 1. Maybe Silent Hill 2, but I like 1 better. 1's creepier, in my opinion. If for nothing else than the first time you actually get into the town, and you go walking around looking for your daughter, and you find this alleyway, and you go down the alleyway, and everything gets all fucked up, and the world starts turning into the other world from Silent Hill. And then you run up on this body, like this rotting corpse that's been crucified to a chain-link fence, and then all these little, like, these little amorphous blob children with knives come out of the woodwork, and they start attacking you, and you cannot fight them. You do not have a weapon. You have to let them kill you to progress in the game. And that, just like playing that as a kid back in the 90s, was beyond fucking creepy. And then you find like the basketball hoop with the dead dog's decapitated head in it. And yeah, it just, Silent Hill is just fucking scary. Great horror game. I realize that I'm rambling. I was going to look up this Rock Paper Shotgun article and go over it. Maybe I can find it. Maybe QQ has an archive of it. I was looking at his pinned tweet and it's like, new video. And I was like, oh shit, Dan and QQ put out a new fucking video. No, this is from July. It's that ideological conquest of science fiction literature, which is great, by the way. Oh, it was a Polygon article. That was it. Thank you. Thank you, Snowflake Puka. I have not... Dude, you got to make this shit legible, dude. His... his at never changes, but he keeps changing up his screen name, and it's very confusing. Yeah, here we go. I got the archive up. There'll be a link to this down in the description. This is one that I wanted to go over because I haven't read this yet, and it kind of deals with what I was talking about in that post that I made, or at least from what I can gather. So, there'll be a link to this archive down in the description because fuck giving Polygon clicks or advertising bucks. When is exclusion a valid design choice? The difference between what you earn and what you're owed, by Ben Kuchera. Now, I'm sure, I'm dead certain, like I said on Twitter, I'm dead certain that this isn't going to sound like a whiny rant written by a fucking entitled 10-year-old that hasn't been given as much ice cream as they want for dinner. Absolutely certain that that's not going to be how this is going to go. So let's get stuck into it. Cuphead is a very challenging game in ways one can argue are both good and bad. What the fuck are they? There's a link here, hang on. Oh, this is the Cuphead Polygon review. Should we go through the review first? Oh, fuck it, we only been here a half hour so far. Or I've only been here a half hour, y'all probably been here like 25 minutes. This is the Cuphead review from Polygon. Cuphead has a reputation for being difficult, so let's clarify this up top. Cuphead isn't impossible, it isn't the Dark Souls of 2D shooters. Thank you. Thank you. Who wrote this? Who wrote this? Please tell me who wrote this. Chris Plant. Thank you, Chris Plant, for actually having some goddamn sense in your fucking head right at the beginning of the article. I instantly like this guy. It's not the Dark Souls of 2D shit. And let's be perfectly fucking clear. Dark Souls is not that hard, guys. It really isn't. Like, I was intimidated as fuck by Dark Souls' reputation before I actually sat down and played it. And then my brother went and played it. And he was like, this game actually isn't that bad, man. You can play it. And I go, okay, fine. I bought it, and I sat down, and I played it. I fucking loved it. It was great. Dark Souls became one of my favorite fucking games of all time, man. Dark Souls is awesome. It's really not as hard as people make it out to be. You just have to be able to get good. There's a reason that those memes exist. Dark Souls is difficult, but it's not as hard as everybody makes it out to be. It sure as shit doesn't deserve its title as the most difficult game of all fucking time, because it's not. If you've ever played or watched somebody play the Silver Surfer game from the NES, you'll know that Dark Souls really isn't all that hard. Dark Souls is designed to be beaten. Silver Surfer is not. Nor is it the world's cutest bullet hell game. It isn't even particularly punishing. Maybe this guy's better at it than I am. I got punished. I got my ass fucking spanked. But I still had fun. For a game that has established an identity around an old-school red hard design, Cuphead is unexpectedly accessible. Announced in the summer of 2014, Cuphead cultivated a fandom around its art style and homage to the 1930s cartoons from Disney and Fleischer Studios. Brothers Chad and Jared Moldenhauer, along with animator Jake Clark, meshed the hand-drawn art with the run-and-gun genre popularized by pixelated games like Mega Man. It does play a lot like Mega Man, too. The only difference, I would say, between Mega Man and Dark Souls, like the original Mega Man, not Mega Man X, is that in Cuphead, you don't have to individually press the button to shoot the gun. You can just hold it down, which we used to call cheating back in the day. But anyway, the result is a throwback on a throwback, an ode to the good old days of games and animation alike. Shrewdly, the creators lanced many of the warts that have festered on the good old days of both forms. This is true. This is true. Let's not sit here and pretend that the NES was the, you know, the halcyon days that we were like, go back and play NES games, man. They're not like the best thing ever. Some of them are. Some of them are really fucking good. Like the Mega Man games, fucking awesome. Contra, fucking awesome. And then there are games like the shit that came out of, what was it, ULJ? Something like the one with the rainbow. The one like go watch the Angry Video Game Nerd. He plays a lot of these games, and it's always that same logo that indicates really fucking bad game design. Gone are both the technical limitations of classic games and, more importantly, the grotesque racist caricatures of classic cartoons. He's not right. Or he's not wrong. You know, lots of those old cartoons did have some pretty racist shit in it. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and pretend that that wasn't there, you know, it was. They had some very racist shit in those old cartoons from, like, the 30s. There were some that didn't. You know, like, there was Betty Boop, the Old Man of the Mountain or something like that. That was a really good one. That didn't have any racist shit in it that I remember. It was also really fun to watch. Like, if you want an idea of what Cuphead's art style is like playing it, go watch that old Betty Boop cartoon, because there's music in the background and everybody's singing a song and the characters bounce along to the music, and it's really, really fucking cool. Like, Cuphead did a really good job recreating that art style. Cuphead's creators have emulated how we remember our nostalgic darlings rather than how they actually exist today. Yeah. I can't believe I'm agreeing with a Polygon article, but yeah, the guy's not wrong. I never thought I would see the day that I would read a Polygon article and go, this is actually pretty reasonable. The end times are upon us, fam. Invest in dried food and guns because the end is nigh. And that's why I say Cuphead shouldn't be missed because of preconceptions about difficulty, barring perhaps the finale, which I'll get to shortly. I haven't seen the finale yet. It borrows ideas from games like Ikaruga and Gunstar Heroes, which I have not played either of those, but it's fine if you aren't familiar with either of those, which, once again, guy's right. This is actually a pretty even-handed review so far. While it's a game about battling overpowered enemies, Cuphead shares more with puzzle games, although it requires healthy reflexes, patience, and above all, a willingness to learn. Yeah, really does. Really, like, that is not a fucking lie. Once again, I can't believe I'm reading a Polygon article and actually fucking agreeing with it. Cuphead is the story of an adorable cup that makes a deal with the devil, then has to repay a debt by collecting the contracts of the devil's other debtors. Satan's debtors amount to a few dozen standalone boss fights, which must be completed so dear Cuphead can save his soul. You and, optionally, a friend in local co-op, which is fucking awesome. I've been mourning the death of local co-op for years now, because that was one of my favorite things to do. Back when I was in college, I would go over to my friend's house. He lived in the same town I went to college in, and I would get out of class and go over to his place, and we would sit there and get drunk and play local co-op video games like Halo, and we tried playing Gears of War, but Gears of War is shit. Or we would boot up one of his emulators, and that was the first time I ever played the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs beat-em-up game, which is fucking awesome. I love that game. Find a NES, and I want to say it might be Super NES. Look it up. They had only got one video game, so if you look up the Cadillacs and Dinosaurs video game, you'll be able to find it. Just get an emulator of that and go play it. It's so much fun. Mustafa was my favorite character to play. It's a lot like Final Fight. Anyway, local co-op is fucking awesome. Like, I could take my computer and I could plug two controllers into it, and me and my brother could sit here and play Cuphead. I haven't yet, because I'm trying to go through the game by myself first, but... You know, it's really nice to know that I can just plug another controller into my computer and, you know, my brother and I can play this game. Or a friend, or whoever. By the way, get a controller. Get a controller. I tried playing this game with the keyboard, and it just... I'm just not familiar enough with it. I grew up with consoles, and I didn't move over to PC gaming until the X-Bone controversy and the PS3, which I just decided just was not worth the money to invest in another console. You know, I can get all the games that I want except for, like, a few scant console-locked titles like Bloodborne and shit like that. I can get all of the games that I want to play on PC and more. So, you know, fuck consoles, but for some shit, I still need a controller. Like, Dark Souls you need a controller for because the PC version is not optimized for mouse and keyboard. So you're going to spend, you know, fucking hours hunting around your keyboard for which is the fucking X button when it looks like an Xbox X button. You know, you gotta find which button on the keyboard correlates to that screen prompt. And it's more trouble than it's fucking worth. Just plug in a fucking Xbox controller. Go get one from GameStop. They're like under $20 for the what's the one that I have? Do I have the GameStop? I think I have the GameStop one. But yeah, you could get like a Mad Catz controller or a GameStop controller. Go get a fucking Xbox 360 controller if you want to play Dark Souls. You and optionally a friend in local co-op travel from one boss to the next, unleashing infinite ammunition into their eyeballs, tummies, appendages, or other vulnerable spots until they submit. all the while you dodge increasingly complex patterns of attacks. The average boss fight in Cuphead, from beginning to end, is roughly 2 minutes long, short enough to be tested over and over and over again. Fights are themselves divided into a few phases, and each phase introduces its own new set of challenges, such as a tall wave of bullets, that inspire tiny epiphanies rather than jump over the bullets, duck. That's the end of the sentence. And each phase introduces its own new set of challenges that inspire tiny epiphanies. There we go. Strung together to complete a stage, these self-taught lessons produce a real sense of accomplishment. It's chemical. I do not fist pump while playing games. I do not whoop. Cuphead had me doing both, while yelping, "I did it," to my very confused and indifferent dog. Yeah, I've had those moments too. My cats will be sitting there watching me play it, and I'll just be, "Yes! Yes! I fucking got that bitch! Did you see that?" It really is that challenging, man. It's not like impossibly hard, but there's a level of difficulty there, and if you're not good at either like bullet hell or side-scrolling 2D shooters, you're gonna have a tough time. Which, I love those kinds of games. Well, not necessarily bullet hell. I'm not really a fan of bullet hell, but Cuphead makes up for it. Just the art style and the music and the challenge level is just so much fun. Cuphead, at its best, educates the player on how to overcome each obstacle. Every boss fight has an ideal strategy discovered through trial and error. To avoid stress, it's helpful to think of failure as a greater tool than any weapon. When a Medusa-like boss froze me in midair, I eventually found the spot to hide from her icy stare. I just played that fucking boss before I sat down and recorded this podcast, and yeah, that was really gratifying, figuring out, you know, where to sit in the screen so that she's not able to freeze you. After a ghastly horseman uppercutted me into oblivion, I knew to keep an eye on the bottom of the screen so I could spot him preparing a strike. With each round against the boss, I found myself progressing further, not because I was becoming some prodigious video game guru, but because I merely spotted and memorized each stone on the walkway to victory. Yeah, that's basically what the game's about. All of this is possible because of one crucial component, consistency. The game isn't designed for true gamers to race through with nothing but raw skill and unearned confidence. If anything, the boss fights punish pride, filling stages with minions, projectiles, and traps. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, this dude, like, I'm struggling to find something to disagree with in this article. This is actually a really even-handed review, which is shocking as shit coming from Polygon. It's not going to make me, like, actually read their website or anything like that, apart from, you know, deconstructing it on the fucking podcast, but this is actually pretty even-handed. I don't know where he gets the dig about true gamers, though, because, like, true gamers isn't, like, that's not, that, like, you're not even wrong. You're asking the wrong questions. You're not, you know, you're not actually looking for true. True gamers are the people who actually like games like Cuphead because it presents a challenge to them and they're not able to just lazily walk through it and not have to put forth any effort into beating the game. The people that you're talking about are, people like, you know, the John, whatever the fuck his name is. Hang on, I got it up on my mind's feed. John Walker, who want to be able to just skip everything and not, you know, not have to put forth any effort into playing a game and just get everything given to them. That guy's not a gamer. The gamers love games like Cuphead because getting to the rest of the story is a challenge that you have to overcome. Where Cuphead scolds speed, it rewards a careful and thoughtful method. Anytime the challenge feels too great, a solution can typically be found by inhaling, exhaling, and carefully considering all possible solutions before diving back into the fight. Once again, yeah, true. It's true. It's a great Zen trainer, man. Like, you know how people, Christians will warn you against praying for patience because that means that God is about to test the absolute fuck out of your patience so that you learn a lesson about having patience. Like, you can only gain patience through adversity. That's what this is like. Like, there's no sense in getting mad at getting beaten by the boss the first, like, 20 times because you have infinite lives. You can come back and fight the boss anytime you fucking want. You can put the controller down, take a break, you know, or go and fight another boss, go and play another level. Whatever. There's always like two or three, until you get to like the very end of the world, so there's always like two or three other places that you can go and other things that you can do to give you a break from the one that's really giving you trouble. I had to go and do that. I was fighting the pirate ship guy and I didn't have the right weapon for it. So I went and I played a couple of other levels and then I found the shop and I bought a couple of other things. I bought the charge shot. The charge shot was what let me get through the pirate ship boss fight. So yeah, it's just all about calming down. Don't take defeat too seriously. Like, Dark Souls did this too, you know, defeat is not the end of the fucking world, you know, just because you lost all your souls, yeah, it can be discouraging if you had a whole shitload of them, but if you're playing the game properly, then, you know, whenever you go into a boss fight, you really won't have a shitload of souls. Just pro tip. Cuphead unlocks new weapons and abilities rapidly, allowing for further experimentation in pursuit of the optimal way to beat any given boss. In a fight, Cuphead can carry two weapons, a bonus power, and a special attack at all times. A thoughtful loadout can impact the difficulty of a stage. For example, a stage with swarms of enemies benefits from a powerful short-range attack, a buff that automatically accumulates special attacks, and a screen-clearing super move. Meanwhile, a humongous boss who fires large projectiles calls for homing bullets, a buff that prevents damage while dodging, and a special move that grants brief invincibility. Invincibility. Yeah, it probably does. I haven't used the invincible power-up yet. I like the damage that the head laser puts out. Loadout and weapons and buffs can be purchased with coins hidden throughout a handful of platforming stages. To be clear, Cuphead isn't a platformer. Well, it kind of is, but not strictly. A few side-scrolling moments have been added for flavor, but where boss fights teach players the unique method with which to clear each fight, these traditional stages are largely completed through brute force, killing everything on screen, pressing forward until the finish line. Classic video game boss fights have fallen out of favor in the past couple of decades, and one wonders if these bits of platforming were added to ground intimidated players in something more familiar. Maybe. Sadly, there's no better reminder of why video games have largely scrapped the classic boss fight than the two final battles of Cuphead. The first is a gauntlet of bosses between 3 and 9, holy shit, along with a bonus boss. And the final, well, I won't go into details, but it felt like a battle with the game itself. I haven't gotten here yet, so I can't speak to this part. Cuphead has an astonishing cohesion, a stunning orchestral soundtrack, and visual confidence that reminds me of my favorite Oob Iwerks cartoons. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. But on occasion, those elements get in the way, particularly the art, which can obscure the foreground, concealing enemies and projectiles. That does happen occasionally, you know. But it's not that big of a deal. Like, that's a nitpick. Like, he's not wrong, but it's a nitpick. Get good, essentially. Sometimes the part of an enemy that can be touched without taking damage is unclear. The final fights combine both of these problems, and what should feel like a culmination of a learned expertise winds up requiring a mastery of the game's idiosyncrasies with help from luck. The conclusion of Cuphead is, I fear, what the game has broadly been perceived as, a comically difficult, if not cruel, experience. And that's really a shame, because the lion's share of Cuphead is a special formula that takes a notoriously challenging genre of the past and carefully and lovingly introduces it to the wider audience it deserves. Wrap up. Cuphead's deal with the devil eventually leads to hell, and so perhaps it's fitting the conclusion should be so torturous. Though, honestly, even the residual headache has been soothed by the sweet, sweet salve of victory. When I think of my time with Cuphead, instead of frustration, I'll remember the dozens of tiny breakthroughs when the impossible became possible, and a game that built an identity around being difficult helped me to feel, however briefly, undefeatable. There you go. This guy is actually a gamer. They have one. They have one on Polygon staff. They have a gamer on Polygon staff, guys. It's a step in the right direction. Credit where it's due. This review is actually really fucking even-handed. I would love to see somebody speedrun Cuphead, to be honest. That would be really entertaining. But I want to beat the game myself first. But yeah, let's get back to this Ben Kuchera article. So yeah, Polygon actually did a good job with the Cuphead review. Very even-handed, very honest. Having played the game myself, I don't really notice anything wrong with that review, apart from that whole true gamer comment. Other than that, straight up, he laid it out like it is. So with this Ben Kuchera article, Cuphead is a very challenging game in ways one can argue are both good and bad. But let's put that aside for the moment and ask another serious question that's at the heart of the rather nasty controversy that has sprouted up again due to the game's difficulty. Are you owed the act of finishing a game because you bought it? The answer is no. The answer is no. 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 Because video games are not books and movies and TV shows. Like I mentioned in that post that I wrote. They're not. They are an interactive medium, and you need to demonstrate a certain level of competency to advance in the game. You know, even if it's through luck, which I beat a lot of the bosses in Cuphead thanks to luck. Some of it was skill and careful planning, like the pirate ship guy, that was skill and careful planning that beat that guy. But some of the other bosses, it's just like, yeah, I got lucky. I can't even, like, the it's a knockout thing would come up, and I'd be like, holy shit, I didn't think I was gonna make it. But you're supposed to demonstrate a certain level of competency to advance in the game. You are not owed anything by a video game, least of all the completion of the video game, simply for shelling out the cost of admission. You're not owed shit by a video game. If you want a video game that just fucking gives you everything, go play a visual novel. You know, you can't even get that with point-and-click adventure games. There's this one really, like, I had to look it up. Primordia? Primordia is an amazing game. It's made by Wajidai, and I highly recommend everybody go and pick it up. It's really fucking good. I love it. But there's one part in that game where you have to do math to get through a puzzle, and it's like a question about prime numbers. It's a puzzle about prime numbers that you have to figure out, and I could not tell you a fucking prime number from a hole in the ground. I do not know prime numbers, so I had to look up how to get through that part of the game. And I have no shame about that at all, because I'm not a math guy, like, in it, by any stretch of the imagination. But Ben goes on. It's not as silly a question as it sounds at first. Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of, like, the fact that you think that that's not a silly question means that you're not a video gamer. You're not a person who's here to play games. You're here to get given everything. Like, asking that question means that you think that you should. I've never asked that question in my entire fucking life. I've been playing games since before I have memory. Like, back when the Nintendo console, the original NES that I had, was originally my mother's. Which is fucking wild to say, but it was. She played it just as much as I and my brother did, my older brother. And I would sit there and watch them play it when I was a little baby, and I would want to play the game too, so they would put an unplugged controller in my hands, and, you know, they would play the game, and I would think that I was playing the game. And then eventually I got to the point where I could actually play the game. And I've been playing video games since then. And in 29? Yeah, I'm almost 30. In 29 years, I have never once asked the question, am I owed the act of finishing a game because I paid for it? Because the answer is no. Because video games are not books, you know, they're not TV shows. Just because, like, okay, yeah, you're owed the end of a movie because you walked into the movie theater and you set down your money, or you bought the DVD, or whatever. You sat down and you watched the movie, you're owed an end to the movie, because that's how movies operate. Video games are fundamentally different. There's a level of challenge and skill and luck involved that you have to either get good or just not see the end of the fucking game. You know, sack up, Susie. Put your big boy fucking pants on and go play the goddamn game, you puss. Video games are one of the only means of expression where you have to pass some sort of test before seeing the rest of what the experience has to offer. No one asks you to solve a logic problem before reading the last page of a book, nor are there many art galleries that ask you a quiz about the paintings that you saw in the last room before you can get to the next one, because those are fundamentally different entertainment mediums. Video games are not art museums. They're not art galleries. There are art galleries in games. Like, I remember the Soul Calibur series actually had a really cool function in 2 and 3 where you could unlock different concept art pieces and, you know, character models and different costumes and shit like that just from playing the game. And you could, if you wanted to, you could sit there and just browse the art gallery. Soul Reaver 2 had that as well. I want to say Blood Omen 2 did too, but don't quote me on that. You could also go and watch all of the cutscenes if you wanted to, like you're watching a movie, but that's completely ancillary to the game, and you have to beat the game to unlock all of that stuff, because video games are not movies. I don't know how many times I have to keep fucking saying this before it gets through these people's thick fucking communist skulls. But a game asks you to get good enough at whatever challenges it offers before you can see the whole thing. You will be tested, and only those who have earned the higher levels through completing those tests will ever see them, as it fucking should be. That's the point of a video game, you mong! Ben Kuchera is such an ass clown. He's such an idiot. Such a baby. Which is why so many quote-unquote hardcore gamers are aghast at the idea of games like Cuphead offering an easy mode or an option to skip the boss fights. Well, okay, look. Easy mode? Nobody has a problem with easy mode, dude. There's an easy mode in the game, and I have not seen gamer one complain about it. I'll call you a pussy if you go play on easy mode, because, you know, you're a pussy. You're not willing to sit there and challenge yourself like the rest of us. But there's nothing inherently wrong with putting an easy mode in a game. Games have had easy modes since the NES, dude. There have been games that have difficulty levels since the fucking beginning. Like, after Pong. Pong, Atari, 2600, Commodore 64, consoles like that. Yeah, they started including, like, easy modes and shit. You know, there were super difficult, like Doom. Doom is a perfect example. Doom has, like, fucking 4 or 5 different modes on it. And yeah, they're set up specifically to piss off people like Ben Kuchera because he's a fucking pussy. Now, I didn't want mods. I wrote modes because I wanted to know what modes Doom has. Okay, yeah, here we go. Doom, Doom 2, and Final Doom skill levels. The easy one are, I'm Too Young to Die, then Hey, Not Too Rough, 3, Hurt Me Plenty, which is basically normal mode, Ultra Violence, which is the hard mode, and then Nightmare mode, which is exactly what it fucking sounds like. And yeah, Doom is a difficult game. I haven't beat it yet. I love the original Doom. I got the Doom 3 version that has Doom and Doom 2 in it, which is available on Steam, by the way. I highly recommend it. It's really good. Like, a lot of people give Doom 3 shit. Doom 3 is a pretty good game. It's not great. It's not, like, the best thing to ever happen to the Doom franchise, but it's pretty good, you know? I liked it. But yeah, since, you know, at least since Doom, the original Doom, there have been difficulty modes where you could go through the game and not really have to fucking work. Like, I like those modes. I like easy modes in games because one of my favorite activities, whenever I have the time for it, is to just get drunk out of my fucking head and play video games. And games without an easy mode don't allow me to do that because, you know, when you get drunk, it impairs your reflexes and your decision-making and shit like that, and your hand-eye coordination. And getting drunk and playing video games is really, like, it's adding an extra level of difficulty to it. Although, I remember, my buddy and I did not seem to have a whole shitload of trouble going through Halo on Legendary difficulty while we were both drinking tequila. And by drinking tequila, I mean we killed that fucking bottle in a night. We had difficulty, but we did it. We beat the game. But sometimes it's nice to have a game like Viscera Cleanup Detail where all you have to do is just go clean this room. That's the entirety of Viscera Cleanup Detail. You got your mop, you can find brooms, you can pick shit up, there's an incinerator, there's mop buckets, there's... what's the other one? There's a generator for different items, like you have to replace the med kits and stuff. You're a janitor. The whole premise of the game is you're a janitor in these various sci-fi situations, and the shit's already gone down, and you have to come in and clean it up. Ridiculously fun game. I put, like, almost 300 fucking hours into Viscera Cleanup Detail, mostly while I was too drunk to see straight or so hungover I couldn't get basic concepts beyond, like, okay, just go clean this room, because thinking hurts right now. So yeah, I do not begrudge an easy mode at all. It's been a thing since before I was born, you know, and it's also really nice to have because I can get shit-faced out of my head and still play a video game and still have fun playing a video game. You know, I don't get my ass kicked while I'm drunk and shit like that. Sometimes it's fun to turn on easy mode and just mow down swaths of Covenant. You know, like your fucking big swinging dick Mick Johnson godhead over here. That shit's fun. I don't know anybody that begrudges an easy mode. I've never heard of any actual gamer saying, this game shouldn't have an easy mode. Except in Dark Souls. Dark Souls, the difficulty is the difficulty. There's no way to make it harder other than just be bad at it. And that's the way that game should be, because Dark Souls is a special case. Dark Souls is a very special case. It's one guy's vision, and he wanted to tell this story this certain way, and the game really isn't all that hard. All you have to do is, like, memorize attack patterns, get your fucking dodge on, or just, like, dress up in Havel the Rock's gear, and not fucking worry about it. That was really gratifying, finding Havel's gear, because then you're not unkillable, but you're damn near unstoppable. Because Havel's gear is meant to fight magic users. So, like, all the magical attacks just have almost no effect on you anymore, and you can't really dodge wearing Havel's gear, but it gives you complete poise, like your poise is at 100%, so nobody can knock you over either. But yeah, Dark Souls, the difficulty level in Dark Souls is kind of decided by what gear you have. You can make it easier or harder on yourself depending on what class you take and what gear you have. If you want to play it on kind of easy mode, then pick, like, the Knight. If you want to play it on hard mode, or if you want to play it on medium mode, pick, like, the Pyromancer. If you want to play it on hard mode, get, like, full wizard. Although, when the wizard gets to a certain point, it's just like D&D. When the wizard gets to a certain point, he's god and nobody can fucking touch him. But the beginning parts of that game are substantially harder if you pick a magic user class, because you don't have a party. It's just you, baby. Anyway, back to this Ben Kuchera thing, because I've been here for a fucking hour and we're still on Cuphead. I'm sorry. I really like this game, and people like this really piss me off because they're so fucking entitled and they do not understand what video games are about. But so far is skipping the boss fights. He mentions offering an easy mode or an option to skip the boss fights. Cuphead is built around boss fights, you dick weasel. That's like the main thing of the game. It is boss fights interspersed with platforming levels. It's like Shadow of the Colossus. Like, this guy's asking to take the fucking boss fights out of Shadow of the Colossus when Shadow of the Colossus was nothing but boss fights. Nothing but. That's literally the entire point of that game. It's like fucking 12 bosses that you have to go through, and all you have to do in between the bosses is go find them. You have to ride out on your horse into the countryside and go find the bosses and then kill them. It's amazing. It's a great fucking game. But getting rid of the boss fights or being able to skip the boss fights in that game inherently cheapen the experience for the player, not for me. If they added that feature in and you were able to skip the boss fights in Shadow of the Colossus, it would not affect me because I'm still going to go and fight the bosses because I want the challenge. You know, I want the feeling of accomplishment that comes from taking on something that's like 500 fucking times your size and killing it. But other people who do skip that are missing out on the entire point of that game. There's no sense of accomplishment that they will feel. I'm concerned about them, not me. You understand? And it's the same thing with Cuphead. If you're allowed to skip the boss fights in Cuphead, it inherently cheapens the experience because this game is like 95% boss fights. Like, that's what you have to do. The devil's like, go out and get the soul contracts for these debtors, and then I won't take your soul. And then you have to go and fight them all. And occasionally you run through a platforming level and you collect coins. The art is beautiful enough that seeing the next level is its own reward for mastering the game's punishing bosses, or at least that's the idea. No, that's kind of part of the point. The art is beautiful enough that, see, like, even while I'm getting my ass kicked, I'm just amazed at the art in this game. It's so good. It's so cool. Like that Medusa boss. Like, even while I was getting the shit kicked out of me by her. Like, there's a part where, the first part of the boss fight is just your kind of standard boss fight, where this chick appears up out of, this gigantic mermaid appears out of the water, and she's throwing, like, puffer fish and ghosts and, like, pirate ghosts and stuff at you. And there's a part where you get through the first phase of the boss fight, and these electric eels come up and bite her, and then she turns into the Medusa monster. And the art in that is so good, it's so cool and amazing that, yeah, it is kind of its own fucking reward for getting through the first part of that boss fight. If you're not good enough to finish that level, you are not deserving to see the next one. There should be no shortcuts. Yeah. Yeah, there have been parts in that game where I'm like, well, I'm not good enough to beat this guy yet. I'm going to go fight one of the other bosses. You know, no big deal. And then I go beat that guy. And then I get, you know, a couple more coins or whatever. And I go and buy a new weapon. And then I go fight the other boss. Then I beat him. And hey, you know, I deserve to see the end of the fight now. I deserve to see the next world because I beat all the bosses in this one. Fucking bag it. God damn it. It's a good thought and a fair read on how some people think games work, but it demands a lot out of the game itself, and Cuphead sometimes falls short. Well, no game is perfect, dude. Like, you really gotta get over that. No game is perfect. No game is ever going to be perfect. Except the original Spyro the Dragon. Spyro the Dragon is a perfect game. There is nothing wrong with it. Not a damn thing. And fuck anybody who tells you different. Not a goddamn thing is wrong with that game. The graphics are cool, especially considering the time period when it was built. It came out in like 97, 98, something like that. The music is by Stuart Copeland of The Police. The drummer from The Police wrote all of the music for Spyro the Dragon. The voice acting is great. Carlos Alazraki has become one of my favorite fucking voice actors because of his work in Spyro. He also did some work with The Thrilling Adventure Hour. He was in an episode of... I'm going to have to look it up now because I don't remember. Beyond Belief. That was it. Beyond Belief. He was an episode of Beyond Belief. I don't remember which one. But he did a really fucking good job in it. I was really impressed. Yeah, Carlos Alazraki is a great voice actor. And the other voice actors in that game are awesome as well. You know, it's just like the controls are tight. The game is fun. It's not too long. It's not too short. There's benefits for finishing the game 100%, and you get to go in this world where you get to chase thieves and, you know, collect treasure, and there's no enemies and shit like that. It's so much fun. And that part of the game where you get to fly, because throughout the rest of the game you just glide, and then there are special levels where you learn how to fly. They're like obstacle courses. When you get to that level where you are able to just fly around and chase thieves and collect treasure and not have to worry about enemies, it's a reward for putting yourself through the hell that the game brings down on you. You know, and Spyro really isn't all that difficult of a game. The Beastmaker's world is the worst one. Make sure you have a bunch of extra lives before you go to Beastmaker's. But other than Beastmaker's, it's a lot of fucking fun. And the one that you're gonna have to have a lot of lives for is Treetops, where you do the super run or the supercharge. That was it. The supercharge thing down the ramps, and you have to go backwards up ramps and shit. It's like I always die like 500 fucking times on that level. Because I can never remember which sequence you're supposed to run backwards up the supercharge ramps to get to the hidden spaces in the level to find the last treasure. I'm horrible with remembering it. I have a guide around here somewhere, or I did, but it never helped me out very much. The only thing that I could do is bring like 20 lives and then just keep trying. Anyway, how some people think games work. No. See, that is how games actually work. You are the one who thinks that they should not work that way. Meaning you are in the minority here. He quotes the review. The conclusion of Cuphead is, I fear, what the game has broadly been perceived as, a comically difficult, if not cruel, experience, our review stated. And that's really a shame, because the lion's share of Cuphead is a special formula that takes a notoriously challenging genre of the past and carefully and lovingly introduces it to the wider audience it deserves. Then we're back to Ben. And that's the problem here, isn't it? The difficulty will turn some people off, and those people will never get to see that art. Yeah, so? Fucking so? Who cares? They should get good. You know, go play the fucking game. I did. I am. I'm currently playing through the game right now. Not while I'm recording, but, you know, over the course of a few days, I'm currently playing through the game. And if I don't beat the bosses, then I don't deserve to see the next world. That's a fucking video game, dude. That's how they've worked since the 70s. You're the fucking one who's coming in here with your fucking weird ideas trying to change how this shit has worked for decades, for longer than I've been alive. You're wrong here. Get the fuck over yourself. Pull your head out of your ass, take your lips off your own cock, and get with the fucking program, because video games do not work the way that you think they should. And they should not conform to your little special snowflake bullshit, okay? They will never enjoy those animations. I don't care. I don't care, and neither should you. If somebody wants to complain about it, then they can go on YouTube and they can watch somebody play the fucking game. We have Let's Plays and Long Plays, which are fundamentally different. A Let's Play is when a personality like Markiplier or Jacksepticeye or whoever plays the game and they add in commentary over it while they're playing. And they put a face cam up. Not everybody does that, but usually there's a face cam involved. Long plays are when people just play the game, record themselves playing it, and then upload that footage. Go watch a long play! If you want to see the fucking artwork, go watch a long play. Or, if you're more interested in having some personable personality talk to you while you're watching the game, go watch Markiplier's Let's Play of it. I'm dead certain that he's played fucking Cuphead. I'll go and check. You know, I actually like Markiplier. He's pretty fun. I don't watch all of his shit, you know, but I have watched several of his Let's Plays, and he's actually pretty... He does a lot of horror games that nobody else touches. And he's shit at horror games, but he keeps signing up to play them. But yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people find Markiplier annoying. I see where they're coming from, but it doesn't bother me. Okay, so PewDiePie has a video up. Parker Games, I don't know who the fuck that is. Outside Xbox has Cuphead gameplay for co-op on Xbox One. Apparently not a lot of people have made... Jacksepticeye has a Cuphead Let's Play up. So yeah, go watch one of these things. Wait for somebody to put up a fucking Let's Play or a long play, and then go watch that, dude. You're not fucking special. If you just want to see the artwork and you don't want to actually put the effort into playing the video game like the rest of us, then just go watch somebody else play it, dude. This is not fucking difficult. We're going to spend a lot of time on this. Sorry, guys. This pisses me off. This legitimately pisses me off. I'm a gamer. I've played video games since I was little. And to see somebody come in and just not only fundamentally misunderstand the hobby, but then act like they understand it better than I do, it grinds my fucking gears. Fuck this guy. Fuck everything about Ben Kuchera. The design of the game itself keeps them out, when the addition of an easy mode or an option to skip the bosses would allow everyone to see as much or as little as they want. Well, if you're skipping the bosses, then you're not seeing the animations in the boss fights, which is really fucking impressive, by the way. You know, if you just want to sit there and watch the boss fights happen, go watch a Let's Play. It's not that difficult. So why are so many people against this idea? Because that is not video games. That is not what video games are about. That is not how the medium works. You're asking for a movie. Go watch a movie. Go watch a YouTube video. You know, you are not playing a video game at that point. You are watching a movie that occasionally requires you to move a controller so that your avatar can move on to the next thing that you're gonna fucking skip. Like the pussy faggot that you fucking are. The question of letting everyone in to experience one aspect of the game while putting the others aside always leads to spirited debates, because you're fucking wrong and you refuse to admit it. You keep coming back with this retarded bullshit, and everybody knows that you're wrong, you know you're fucking wrong, but you just won't stop. That's why the debate is so spirited, dude, because you're wrong, you've been disproven, I've done it in this podcast. And yet you keep flapping your fucking gums and typing into your fucking keyboard like you know fuck all about what you're talking about. Go away. Go away. Just stop. Just stop play. Go see if you can get a job at MSNBC or CNN. Go be an intern. Go fetch fucking coffee for, you know, God, I don't fucking know. I don't watch those goddamn people. I don't know who's doing the news shows over there. Go see if you can fetch coffee for those motherfuckers, since you don't want to take this fucking seriously. You obviously don't want to take this seriously. And it is fucking serious, okay? Video games are the single largest entertainment industry on planet Earth. They rake in more yearly than Hollywood and music combined. This is serious shit. And if you're not going to take it seriously, if you're going to be fucking Bush League about this bullshit, then go home. Fucking go home. Go do something else. Go get a job flipping burgers for all I fucking care. But you're not qualified to talk about video games because you are not taking this seriously. And despite what people would have you believe, it is serious shit. Okay? Like I say, biggest entertainment industry on the face of planet Earth. All right? There shouldn't be any disconnect here. Your job is to play video games, be reasonably good at them. I'm not asking for you to be pro MLG, you know, winning tournaments and shit like that. I'm not that good. I freely admit that I'm not that fucking good. But, you should be reasonably competent at video games. And this bitching about, oh, it's too hard. Well, I'm sorry, Pumpkin. Do you want an ice cream sandwich? Do you want me to kiss your boo-boo? Show me on the doll where Cuphead hurt you. Ugh, he's just such a limp-wristed fucking pansy. Oh, and he quotes that fucking Rock Paper Shotgun article that I did a response to earlier this week. Because the real nub of it is, it's about exclusivity. Sorry, I have to put on a smug voice for this. Because the real nub of it is, it's about exclusivity, Rock Paper Shotgun wrote. It's about keeping the thems, the riffraff, the outsider out. This section of the game, this is special to me and only those who are great as I am. I deserve this bit of the game. Those weaklings do not. Gosh, it's an ugly way of thinking, isn't it? And so utterly idiotic, too, because it requires the mental gymnastics of somehow believing that one's own isolated experience of a game is cheapened, lessened, impacted in any conceivable way by the isolated experience of someone else playing the game. No, it's fucking not. Okay, you're cheating yourself. You're cheating yourself, dude. That's what it's about. All right? You should be wanting to challenge yourself, even if it's just in the realm of a video game, even if it's just in virtual reality. You should be wanting to challenge yourself and rise to those challenges. Video games provide an easy outlet for that instinct because people do have that as a fucking instinct. It's ingrained in the human condition to want to meet challenges and to feel good about overcoming them. That's just how people fucking operate. Apart from communist faggots like you, I don't often use the beta fuck shit, but yeah, this dude is a fucking beta. He wants everything given to him. He doesn't want to work for anything. Go build a porch. And you think I'm fucking joking, but I'm not. Go out and learn how to make a porch, and then make a porch for your house. Okay? Go build something with your own two hands, and tell me that you do not feel a sense of accomplishment when you finish it, when you get all of the measurements right, and it comes out looking exactly the way you fucking want it to. You know, or painting models like Warhammer 40K. You know, when you finally get that paint job right, and, you know, through all of those grueling hours of sitting there and getting the tiniest details on the armor right, or getting that effect that you want looking just right. Like, I worked out how to, I was proud of shit of myself. I worked out how to get the runes on the Space Wolves' power swords to glow, because the Space Wolves are Space Vikings, and they have, like, runes engraved on their swords. So what I did was I took a toothpick and some watered-down white paint, and I dripped white paint into the runes, and then I let that dry, and I painted it over with Guilliman Blue, which is a wash, which is basically ink. It's not paint, it's ink. And it leaves the original color that you have beneath it so that you can see it. It's just everything is tinged in blue. It's like, if you've ever seen, it was a John Carpenter movie, but the guy from Jurassic Park plays the main character. In the Mouth of Madness. That's it. In the Mouth of Madness. What was the actor's name? Because Sam Neill. That's him. But there's a scene in the movie where he's talking to this writer who's basically like a mix of Stephen King and H.P. Lovecraft. And he's developed these godlike powers because he's been basically consorting with Cthulhu. And they're sitting on a bus and the writer just appears next to him. And he looks over at him and he's like, "Did I ever tell you that my favorite color is blue?" And then everything has a blue filter over it. And he just he flips the fuck out. He just starts screaming on this bus. Sam Neill is such a good actor. But it's kind of like that. The blue filter, you can still see the color that everything else has over it. But, you know, there's this tinge of blue to everything. And if you put the white paint underneath the blue wash, it looks like the runes are glowing. And I was proud as shit of that. It looks really cool. That was a sense of accomplishment that I got out of figuring this out for myself. Nobody told me how to do that. I didn't go to the Warhammer 40K YouTube channel and learn from what's his fuck? I don't even remember the dude's name. It's not important. And learn from that guy how to do this. I worked that out myself, you know, and I was really proud of that. It looks really good, in my opinion. I like it. I like it a lot. But that's part of the experience with video games. You know, you work hard and you accomplish this shit, and then you get that little kick of dopamine that lets you know that you did it. You know, you did it with your own two hands, with your own skill and your ingenuity and a little bit of luck. You made it through. Like I keep saying, that's part of the fucking point here. And the thing is that this guy is talking about people from the rock, paper, shotgun thing. He's talking about people thinking that they're entitled, they deserve that part of the game because they made it through. Well, they actually do. You think that you deserve, it's that SJWs always lie, project, and double down. He's projecting. He thinks that he deserves the rest of the game for zero fucking effort. Meanwhile, everybody else thinks that they should just have to play the game like a regular fucking human being. Once again, I'm sorry for going off on this for so fucking long. It's probably been like an hour and 20 minutes for you guys at this point. But this pisses me off. This really legitimately makes me fucking angry. Video games is a medium that I care about. It's a hobby that I care about. And I care about people like this fuckhead coming in here and trying to fuck it up for everybody who's been doing this for longer than he has. He thinks that he should be allowed to just waltz in here and have everybody change to suit his tastes. Well, fuck you, dude. The real world doesn't work that way. And yet, the difficulty is part of the experience playing Cuphead. My God, he had a moment of lucidity, guys. There was a lucid moment in here. Watch him pull that back in the very next sentence. I haven't read the next sentence yet, but I'm just gonna bet. Let's see. I'll make a bet with you guys. We'll see if he walks that back in the next sentence or not. Difficult games create an emotional reaction in the player, and that reaction might be the point of the difficulty. Holy shit, he didn't! He didn't, guys! He actually has a lucid paragraph in this! If every game is designed to make you feel something, Cuphead players may be feeling how the developer hoped they'd feel, for good or ill. It's good. It's good. It feels good to beat the bosses in Cuphead. Because you beat them. You did it. You know, they're difficult. There's a level of difficulty and challenge there that you overcame. There's a quote from The Verge. "Every death takes you immediately back to the start, no loading required, and the tantalizing thought of completing the level is teased with the timeline tracking your progress," The Verge wrote. "Figuring out the boss's mechanics on your own, applying them to the fight, and taking them down because you had the spatial awareness to avoid all the crap thrown at you is what the game is all about." Yes! Yes! Thank you, writer for The Verge! You get it! You understand! Somebody gets it! I almost want to weep with joy. I'm also drinking, and I haven't had a whole lot to eat today. So, that might have something to do with my rambling and my, caring about this way, way too much. I had my own lucid moment there. I'm bogging down the podcast for a fucking hour and a half talking about this shit, but it makes me so mad because Cuphead is such a good game and it does not deserve this bullshit attached to it. Go buy it. Go buy it. I really do implore you guys, go buy the fucking game and play it. It's good. It's really good. I sense another lucid moment coming up. So, if a game is designed to be played a very particular way, and Cuphead asks you to treat the failure as a chance to learn and rewards repetition and memorization, aren't you subverting those goals by asking for a mode that removes that method of play? Yes! Yes! Why are we even having this discussion? You fucking retard. Yes! Yes! That's... yeah! That's been my fucking entire point this whole time! Museums may not quiz you between rooms, but they also don't offer to let you choose the color palette of every painting depending on how you'd like to see them. Yeah. Yeah, I can't believe I agree with Ben Kuchera on something, but yeah. There's a wonderful, although often contradictory, Twitter thread about these questions started by developer Rami Ismail, who, if I remember properly, is a total cunt. Like, I recognize the name, but I don't know from where. And, for some reason, the memory that I have in my head of Rami Ismail makes me think that he's a fucking cunt. Don't know why. Don't know why. Maybe Dan or QQ would know, but I'm not about to go ask them about it. There's no easy or correct answers to be found. Yes, there fucking are. You just don't want to admit that you're wrong. That's the problem here, is that you're wrong and refuse to admit that you're wrong, and you're demanding that reality shapeshift to what you think it should be. It doesn't fucking work like that, sunshine. There's also the issue that games this difficult with no option to turn down that difficulty or skip. There is an option to turn down the difficulty. There's an easy mode. There is an easy mode. At the start of every stage, you get to choose whether or not you want to play it on easy or regular. There is an easy mode. Go play that and stop being such a fucking faggot. And fuck your skip boss fights bullshit. Can completely dismiss players without full motor control of one or both hands. Bitch, don't even fucking give me that. There's a guy out there who is paralyzed from the fucking neck down who plays World of Warcraft and is good at it. And he does live streams and raises money for charity. Fuck you. Fuck you. Thinking that these people need you to hold their goddamn hand and usher them through the game because you think they're somehow fucking lesser. That guy rose to the fucking challenge. He really likes playing World of Warcraft. It makes him feel accomplished because he's paralyzed. He can't do a whole lot of shit. But interacting with people in Twitch and playing the fucking game and interacting with people in the video game make him feel good. And you're trying to take that sense of accomplishment away from these people by just... just dismissing this shit. And not everybody can afford the setup that this guy has. So if you don't have full motor control in one or both hands, or if you've got like Parkinson's or some shit, well, maybe video games aren't for you. You know, I'm sorry. Life is cruel. Life isn't fair. Maybe video games aren't for you. Like, I had to deal with that shit earlier this year. I almost went blind. That's terrifying. It's horrifying. I was locked up for like 2 months over that shit. Just absolutely fucking terrified that I might go blind, because most of the things that I really enjoy doing require sight. I like to read, I like to watch movies, I like to watch TV shows. I like to argue with people on the internet. And most of that requires sight. You know, you kind of need sight to be able to do all of that shit. But if I had gone blind, then I would have given all that shit up. Unless there was some special way that would make me able to get past it. You know, with video games, I'm shit out of luck. With movies and TV shows, I'm shit out of luck. But I can still read. You know, I can still get my brother to look up, what do you call them? Audiobooks. I don't know why I blanked on audiobooks. I'm a fucking audiobook producer. Oh my God. That's pathetic. I need to slow down on the drinking, but I'm not gonna. But yeah, I would have listened to audiobooks. You know, it's a big deal, but... some people just have physical limitations that preclude them, physical and financial limitations that preclude them from being able to do certain things. It's not their fault, and they shouldn't feel bad about it. But that doesn't mean that everybody has to bend to correct for their impairment. You know, this isn't Harrison Bergeron here, okay? Now we're talking about museums that don't offer things like wheelchair ramps, and I think this metaphor has gotten away from me a bit. Just a bit. You think? Just a little bit? Just a fucking little bit? It's not like museums that don't offer things like wheelchair ramps, okay? Because a person with a wheelchair who is completely paralyzed from the waist down can still get out on the ground, fold up their fucking wheelchair if nobody wants to help them. They could probably find two or three people to carry them in their wheelchair up the stairs into the museum so that they can go and enjoy everything. But if they can't, they're still able to fold up their wheelchair and drag it up the steps with them, set it back up, lock the wheels, get back in the fucking wheelchair, unlock the wheels, and then go and enjoy the fucking museum. Your metaphor is shit, dude, and it always has been. There's a quote from Andrew Travis from Twitter. A few things. One, difficulty isn't a blockade. It's meant to evoke a particular emotional response. Well, that's half true. It's both. It is a blockade. You know, if a game is difficult and you're not able to get through the difficulty, then you're blocked. You don't get to see the rest of the game. That's how it goes. And it is also meant to evoke a particular emotional response when you get through the difficulty. Two, if the difficulty is much higher due to intersecting disabilities, the design will fail in its goal. Wrong. Absolute, flat out, false. That's just not how this works at all. Just because somebody is disabled, just because like 2% of the population, or whatever the number is, are disabled to the point where they are not able to play a game like Cuphead, that does not mean that the design has failed, because, let's just go with the 2% number, 98% of people are still able to play it and enjoy it. Except for dry, emotionless fucks like this guy. Fucking soy boys, I swear to God. Players decide the value of any accomplishment, there's no canonical value. Well, yeah. I can agree with that. There's not really any canonical value to, you know, nothing is handed down from on high that says this achievement is worth this. Unless you're talking about, like, Steam achievements or Xbox Live achievements or whatever. Because then the achievement that you get is based on being able to accomplish the thing that triggers you getting the achievement. Like, I got pissed off at my friend one time because we were playing Left 4 Dead, and he was drunk and he did not have his glasses. So he's at a double disadvantage here, but he's like standing up next to the television, and me and him and a couple of other friends are playing Left 4 Dead, and a witch comes up. Now, if you don't know what the witch is a monster that sits on the floor and cries, and then when you get near her, she kills the person that triggers her and then runs off. Well, he didn't know where she was. Like, we could hear the witch crying, but he didn't know where she was. We were in an office building. And he opens the door and just sees a zombie. He doesn't know it's the witch. And he bucks her in the fucking head with a shotgun. He just takes her out. Kills her. Straight. You're not supposed to be able to do that. But there's an achievement in the game called Crowned, where it's killing a witch with a single headshot. You cannot do that with a sniper rifle. The only way to get that achievement is to run up on a witch, take her by surprise, and kick her in the head with a fucking shotgun. And he did it by accident and got that achievement, and I was so mad. I was so ass-pained because he did it by accident. But he deserved the achievement because he did it. He did it. You know, he met that challenge, and he got the achievement for it. If players decide the value of personal accomplishment in a game, and they do, why not let them also decide how they want to engage that game if it's technically possible? I don't really have a problem with Askreed putting in a tourism mode. It doesn't advance the game, but if you want to just go walk around and look at ancient Egypt without having to worry about fucking guards running up on you and shit, yeah, sure, go for it. I don't fucking care. Doesn't bother me at all. If the devs want to put that in the game, fine, let them put it in the game. It ain't gonna hurt me. If that's how a player wants to interact with the game and the devs give them that option, then fine. You know, what the fuck ever. You know, there's a demand, the devs met it. Fine. I don't have a fucking problem with that. But asking every game designer ever to put this into their games? Fuck you, dude. You're trying to control their freedom of expression. You're all about, oh, gamers should be able to express, even though you're not a fucking gamer, gamers should be able to express themselves within the confines of this video game however they want. Well, no, they shouldn't. Okay? No. You're given tools by the dev team to do things that they designed the game around you doing. And if you're not able to do those things, then you don't beat the game. You know, asking every single dev team to put walking simulator mode into their games is just an unnecessary and overbearing request on the entire games industry as a whole, and it will kill the games industry. It's one of those little steps along the road. You know, you can accuse me of doing the slippery slope fallacy, but it's not all that slippery, okay? Like I say, go watch Appa Ben's video. If I find it, I'll link it. You can skip right to the end of any episode of Game of Thrones if you're watching on HBO's app and no one will stop you. Yeah, but you're not going to get the enjoyment out of actually watching the episode. So, I saw the ending. Well, yeah, but did you see anything else that everybody is fucking talking about that led up to that ending? No, you're behind the fucking eight ball, dude. It's just like, this is a retarded argument. Your enjoyment will be decreased, but I'm not sure anyone would argue that the value of its show itself is diminished because you have that option. Well, yeah, no, of course not. But your experience will be diminished, which is my entire fucking point here. Game design can indicate where value should be, but it's impossible to enforce those suggestions in any meaningful way once the game is out in the wild. Well, if you don't agree with the level of value that the game devs have set upon any particular challenge, go play something else. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Steam has a refund option, okay? I'm pretty sure you can refund games on GOG, too. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that you can. You know, you can take your game to GameStop and exchange it or trade it in for store credit or something. You know, you can go play something else if this is not to your tastes. And that's what gamers have been... Spoiler alert! That's what gamers have been doing since before you were fucking born! I don't actually know if it was before Ben Kuchera was born. I don't know how old the faggot is. He can't be much older than me. And it's hard to argue that those indications should be canonical due to authorial intent when they may keep someone from playing the game at all, unless that was the entire point of their inclusion. Now you're just impugning the motives of the game designers. You're trying to imply that they had some sinister, exclusionary, ulterior motive going on when they designed this game with the level of difficulty that it has, and that's not the case. God, you're such a smug fucking prick. Are you owed the final scene of a game if you buy it, regardless of your physical ability or mastery of what the game is trying to teach you? Can exclusion be a valid artistic goal? Yeah. Yeah, fucking course it can. Art can be anything, fag. Look at postmodernism. Look at Piss Christ. Look at that fucking, the one dude who signed a urinal. I talked about this in a podcast with Cloud Cuckoo Country a while back. But there was one artist who signed a urinal, and it was a piss take on how stupid postmodernism was. And he signed this urinal and then put it up like it was an art piece, and it wasn't meant to be taken seriously, but then everybody started commenting on how deep it was. And yeah, that's basically what you're doing here. Anything can be a valid artistic goal, whether it be showing the art community to be completely fucking retarded or excluding people that aren't able to master the game enough to get past that one certain part that gave you so much trouble. Besides, there are some players who have mastered the game completely. You can see a perfect run of the game's bosses below, in fact. Ooh, that sounds cool. Whether or not you're bothered by seeing boss fights you didn't earn yourself is, of course, up to you. You're such a smug piece of shit. Yeah, we're done with this. That's it. That's the end of the article. I hate Ben Kuchera so much. I really do. I despise Polygon. Despite their review of Cuphead, which was pretty even, you know, I respect their review of Cuphead, but Jesus. Well, that took way too fucking long. And as per usual, I do not have the sponsor list up. So let's do some sponsors right fast. And then I'll fucking ramble about some other shit. I've got a thing. I did a little, like, mini tweet storm thing about how useless fucking Republican politicians are. And I kind of want to expand on that. But, so if you like what I do here, you know, you like the podcast, you like the stuff that I put up on the website, you like the audiobooks, you like, the interviews that I do, then there are a couple of ways that you can support me if you so choose. I will be very much appreciative, but you don't have to do anything. All the free stuff is going to stay free. But the first up is the Patreon. You can find a link on the website on the left-hand side of the blog. And if you go over there and donate some money every month, then what you will get is free, depending on your definition of free, audiobooks of pulp stories. And these are mostly short. They're like 4 to 26 pages, I think. Or, well, no, 46 was the biggest one I saw. But, yeah, somewhere in there, I'll go and I'll read them and I'll narrate them and edit all this stuff together, put it in different ebook formats like PDF, Mobi, rich text files, EPUBs, all that shit, and put it up on this file hosting site. And then when the payment goes through, I will send you a link to the file hosting site. You go download whatever the fuck you want. And for people that don't want to donate every month, these will come up on Bandcamp after about a month. So the ones for September will be going up at the end of October. And the ones for October will be going up at the end of November, and so on and so forth. So if you want to support me and get some free audiobooks, like I say, depending on your definition of free, then you can go over to Patreon and do that. Next up, we have the Cat Kimbridge audiobooks. The Cat Kimbridge Chronicles is a military science fiction story that is centered around this woman who crash lands on Mars, if I remember right, and then her body is rebuilt by an alien, and then she goes on to be, like, pretty much the baddest motherfucker ever, but she still runs into trouble. She's not a Mary Sue or anything like that. Like, she's just kind of amplified. Like, she has nanites and super strength and stuff like that, but, you know, she still needs help. And the various cast of supporting characters fill in those roles quite nicely. And there are some parts where she actually has to have these people save her fucking bacon because she went off half-cocked and got into too much trouble to handle. It is also a superversive series, meaning God has taken his red as existing. It treats religion very respectfully. Greetings, beloved of the creator is a common greeting in this universe. And it's just refreshing to see that, because there's a lot of science fiction stories out there that are just shit, and they take God as belief, religiosity, as being something for stupid people, and this very much does not do that. And the priest character is actually really fucking cool. I liked him a lot. I had a lot of fun voicing that character. So if that sounds like it's up your alley, go and check those out. I did 6, 7, and 8 in the series, but not in that order. I did 7, 8, and 6. And it's really good work, guys. I'm not just chilling this because I get royalties off of these books. I really do enjoy them, and between doing 7 and 8 and then requesting 6, I went and bought the rest of the audiobooks because I wanted to see the rest of the story because I enjoyed it so much. So, go check out the Cat Kimbridge audiobooks that I have done. You don't have to start with number 1. It kind of helps, but you don't have to. It's kind of like how you can start up a season of Star Trek halfway through the season and still enjoy the episodes, but you're not going to know what happened before unless you go back and watch the rest of it. Then we have the Dimension Bucket Media audiobooks, which, once again, watch this space. We are coming out with some stuff in October, I believe, this month. I'm going to be releasing a short fantasy anthology and a kind of Conan-style short story. It's like 5, maybe 6 chapters long, but the chapters are only like 1,000 words. And we're not going to be charging all that much for it. We also have the first Gorefinder book that's coming up, and a couple of other things. I think Christopher Warren has like 2 books that he's going to be putting out. So there's a bunch of shit coming, and this list is about to get abominably long, so I'm probably just going to like shorten it up and take a couple of titles here and there and recommend those to you. Probably our newest stuff, but all of this stuff is available in the store page on my website. You just click the picture, it'll take you right to the Amazon page where you can buy it at. So we have Hell's 5-Minute Tales of Horror, which is exactly what it says on the tin. It's a bunch of short stories and microfiction that will take you no longer than 5 minutes to read any of them. And Hell is actually a pretty damn good writer. I think we've got a couple of reviews back on her stuff at this point, maybe on Amazon. And people seem to be enjoying it. I like it. I like what I've read so far. And I recommend it to you guys if you're into horror microfiction. Dimension of Cobwebs is a collection of weird tales from grandmasters of the craft. So we have H.P. Lovecraft, Edgar Allan Poe, Bram Stoker, Frank Belknap Long, Hans Heinz Ewers, and H.G. Wells. I think there might be one other guy there that I'm forgetting, but I don't remember who it is. But this is kind of like the beginning of weird fiction, like the original shit that inspired weird fiction. So go and check that shit out if that sounds like it's up your alley. We have Darkest of Dreams, which we've been getting very favorable reviews on that. John Mollison actually enjoyed it, and he's really not a horror guy. He has the review up under horror. The title of the post is Horror on the Castalia House blog, which, John, I still owe you a beer and a steak for that, man. I wasn't expecting you to put it up on Castalia. I really wasn't. And I'm very grateful. But it is a collection of short stories, mostly with a horror bent, but there's some sci-fi and fantasy in there too, mostly with my stuff. But it's by the Dimension Bucket Media crew, so that's me, Christopher Warren, a.k.a. Dimension Bucket, Connor Goff, a.k.a. Notshade, and William Harmer, a.k.a. Gentleman Walrus. So if you're familiar with any of our work from YouTube, then you're gonna like this. Almost guaranteed. A Man Upstairs is a collection of creepy verse by Christopher Warren. It's kind of free verse poetry, and the guy's not a poet, and he really doesn't like free verse poetry, so this is really an experiment for him. But a lot of people really seem to like this collection of stories, even Ogma, as he's more conventionally known. Even Oum said it was interesting. Said, I don't know if that's good. I don't know if he liked it, but he said it was interesting. And the reviews on Amazon have been pretty favorable so far. So if that sounds like it's up your alley, then go check that out too. Oh, we have Cracked by Connor Goff, which is a novelette, whatever. I don't know which is which. It's a short novel about a guy who discovers a horrible secret behind reality and has to figure out what's going on before reality collapses around him because it starts fracturing and weird, freaky shit goes on. And I really like Connor's work. He has a special touch with madness, which is exactly like this. Like, if you've ever heard of the game Afraid of Monsters, Connor's writing is a lot like that game. He has this special touch with madness that's really impressive. And we have Phoenix on the Sword, which is the first published Robert E. Howard Conan story, the first Conan story ever to be seen anywhere. And we put it together very carefully and went and paid Kakuryo like $110 to get the nice cover that we have. It's very good. I love the cover. Very impressed with Kakuryo's work. I'm going to be contracting him more often in the future when I get money to buy art. But Conan, it's late in his life. He's king of Aquilonia, and there's a plot to assassinate and depose him and install a puppet government. And there's a Stygian warlock who summons a baboon demon to go and attack the people who betrayed him. And Conan winds up fighting it. It's so good. It's so amazingly good. Like, if you want a good primer on why Robert E. Howard is the greatest American author since Edgar Rice Burroughs, go read Phoenix on the Sword. Our version of the book is up on Amazon, and it's pretty cheap, too. All right, that's it for the first round of sponsors. So what we're going to do is there after the whole Vegas shooting, which my condolences to the people who died and the family members of the people who died and loved ones and all of that. You know, it's the kind of thing that you have to say whenever something like this goes down. The problem that I have noticed with politicians, specifically on the right, is that they are unable to frame their arguments in compassionate terms. You know, for example, the whole, what is it, bust stock? Bump stock. That's it, the bump stock. I did not know that bump stocks existed before this shooting. But with that whole thing, people are going, oh, we should ban this. No. And I want one and can afford it is a perfectly legitimate argument. But if you want to win hearts and minds, which you must do in a democratic system, then the way that you have to frame this is in compassionate terms. You know, all of this big idea shit about combating tyranny and things like that, once again, perfectly legitimate. Really hard for the average person who hasn't put a lot of thought in this to grasp. So what these politicians need to do, instead of being completely fucking ineffectual pussies about this whole shit and just caving to whatever Democrats want, is say, okay, well, you want gun control. You think that we should have a ban on semi-automatic weapons. Well, that includes most handguns. That also includes guns like the AR-15, which has less of a kick than a shotgun. Joe Biden. Good old Shotgun Joe. Go look up some videos of women shooting shotguns, and you'll see exactly what I'm fucking talking about. They don't usually have the upper body strength to hold on to it. In some cases, it could have turned deadly because it'll go completely over, like they'll fire the gun and it'll go completely over their fucking shoulder and then turn around and the barrel will be facing somebody, you know, who was standing behind them where it's supposed to be safe. Shotguns are not ideal for home defense. But the way that you frame this is, okay, you want to get rid of semi-automatic weapons that are ideal for home defense, like the AR-15. Well, what if a rapist breaks into a woman's home? You know, she's there by herself. It's just her and her cats. A rapist breaks into her home and she does not have a gun to defend herself. You know, and before anybody brings up tasers or pepper spray, those are not 100% effective. Okay, there's like 6% of the population that does not respond to either of those things. They're really dangerous people. But there are people out there that you can hit with a taser and it will make full fucking contact and they will not feel it. Or, you know, they're high on PCP and they're not in their right fucking mind. A gun is 100% effective in those situations. So essentially what these Democrats are saying when they want to get rid of semi-automatic weapons is that they want women not to be able to protect themselves from rapists. That's what Stephen Colbert is saying. That's what Jimmy Kimmel is saying. That's what, you know, insert late night talk show host here, who's recently started spouting off about gun control from a left liberal Democrat point of view. That's what they're saying. They want the ability to rape women. Or they want rapists to have the ability to rape women, because when seconds matter, the police are minutes away. How long did it take the cops to show up at that mass shooting in Vegas? 72 minutes? Something like that? It's a fucking over an hour it took for the cops to show up. And, you know, this isn't exactly, I don't know all of the details of the shooting in Vegas, but when you're in your home at night and somebody breaks in, you can call the cops, yeah, but they are under no obligation to show up or show up in a timely manner if they do show up. And then your home defense is on you. So if a 200-pound, roided-out, PCP-smoking guy busts into some woman's house with some rape on his mind, and the woman does not have a gun to defend herself, too bad, sorry, you got raped. That's what these guys are going to say. They're just going to completely ignore that that fucking happened, which makes them the moral bad guys here. And this can be done with almost any kind of right-leaning political position. You know, oh, you're against capitalism. That means that you're against the free association of people and people being able to earn their way out of a bad situation. You know, it sounds good to give everything to everybody, but it's just not feasible, and you wind up collapsing the economy. You know, like Venezuela. They wanted to nationalize everything and socialize everything, and it wound up turning their country into a shithole in 10 years. In 10 years, Venezuela collapsed to the point where people are being given rabbits by the government. And the government's like, just kill the rabbit and eat it. But they don't want to kill the rabbit because it's nice and fluffy and it's a good pet for the kids and stuff like that. You know, despite the fact that they're fucking eating garbage, you know, socialist policies lead to Venezuela. It's an inherently evil position to hold. And you have to start framing it that way. These people, do not let them backfoot you on this. They are not moral good guys, no matter how much they fucking act like it. They're pretending to be the moral good guys to get the public on their side. And it works. Especially with women. Because, I'm sorry, we're about to get into some real fucking talk here. Women are more susceptible to threat narratives than men, okay? A threat narrative is essentially, you know, there is a threat out there and only I or the government or whatever can protect you. A threat narrative establishes a threat and then establishes a solution to the threat that usually does not involve self-defense. And women are more susceptible to it than men. Proof? Look at feminism. Look at feminism. You know, they have this established threat narrative about a gender bias in STEM. If more women went into STEM, where they are actually trying to get more women into STEM, it would go away. That gender bias, that gender disparity would go away. They give money to women to get them into STEM degrees and STEM classes so that they can shore up this perceived sexism in science. But it doesn't work because the women go into gender studies and they submit to these threat narratives. Meanwhile, all the guys are going into STEM. And it's taken guys decades to catch up with the threat narrative that feminism is actually presenting about men. You know, it had to get so bad that men's constitutional rights are being abrogated on college campuses before anybody stood up and did anything. That's how bad it had to get before men actually realized, hey, this isn't just a threat narrative, there's an actual threat to us here. You know, why do you think MGTOW is a thing? Men finally woke up to the actual threat, not the threat narrative. But women are susceptible to threat narratives when no threat actually exists. Thus, the massive disparity in female involvement in gender studies and STEM. It's really that simple. It really fucking is. Women are more susceptible to threat narratives than men. And if you're a woman that isn't susceptible to threat narratives, fine. Good for you. I'm happy for you. I really fucking am. But you are not representative of the population as a whole, okay? You're the outlier. Your being an outlier does not negate the data that I have presented. Oh, what data have you presented? The data. The fucking data. Go look at the disparity in female enrollment in gender studies and STEM. There you go. That's my fucking data. Gender studies does nothing but present a threat narrative to women, and they succumb to it. In droves. But if these Republican politicians really want to get on this bandwagon of presenting themselves as the compassionate side in the debate, then they have to start acting like they're doing this in the best interests of women. That's it. You just act like you're on women's side, even if you're not. You know, the feminists aren't on women's side. Women are more miserable since the advent of feminism than they have ever been in human history. On the whole, there are certain situations like the fucking Rape of Berlin or the Rape of Nanking where those women were very, very dissatisfied with their lot in life, to put it mildly. But overall life satisfaction levels in women have gone down since the advent of feminism. They're not on women's side. They really fucking aren't. They aren't trying to make life better for women. They pretend like they are. So if you have to pretend like you're doing shit for women to make their lives better, then do it. That's how you frame this shit. That's how you get the public on your side, because everybody cares more about women than they do men. You know, why do you think that there's been such a pushback against Betsy DeVos getting rid of Title IX while it is completely unconstitutional and abrogates the rights of men? And something like 70% of the court cases that go through when a student gets kicked out on Title IX, when a male student gets kicked out on a Title IX violation, and he goes through these fucking star courts, and then he goes and sues the school, he wins. It's an overwhelming majority of cases where the guy wins against the school. But despite all of that, you know, Betsy DeVos doesn't look like she wants to protect women. Well, maybe lying about rape isn't in women's best interests. Maybe seeing rape everywhere where none exists isn't in women's best interests. Maybe completely demonizing men and putting them through star courts and abrogating their First Amendment rights is not in women's best interests. So just frame it in a way where it sounds like you're protecting women. Even if you're not doing it to protect women, even if you're doing it for these grand lofty ideals of protecting freedom and shit like that, couch it as protecting women and you will get the public on your side. But these limp-wristed, fucking limp-dick and ball-less politicians that we have on the right are just so scared that standing up to the Democrats is going to lose them an election. When it won't, it won't. It legitimately fucking won't. Unless you're in, like, a really, really blue state. But look at that fucking crazy dude from Alabama that swept his fucking election. Look at Trump, for God's sake. Trump stepped up and just, like, slapped all these people with his dick, and now he's the president. We have examples. You know, there's no excuse anymore for this limp-wristed tactics. And I guess that's all I wanted to say about that. I forget where I was fucking going with that. Like I say, I haven't had a lot to eat today, and I've been drinking. Having trouble keeping my mind straight. There was another thing that I wanted to talk about. I'll be goddamned if I can remember what the fuck it was. Oh, that was it. I have this page open so that I didn't forget. To bring you guys an update from the science fiction and fantasy world, specifically the SFWA, the Science Fiction Writers of America, John De La Rose has been blackballed and there is a whisper campaign against him. This is from Benjamin Che on Steemit, and there will be a link to this, and I highly recommend that you sign up for Steemit and upvote his post, because it helps him out. They have an internal cryptocurrency that you can convert to Bitcoin and then convert to whatever fucking currency your country uses. And upvoting posts literally, like, helps him out and pays him. Steemit's actually pretty cool. But, here we go, from Benjamin Che. John De La Rose, a leading Dragon Award-nominated science fiction and fantasy author, and, I might add, the leading Hispanic voice in science fiction today. He is Hispanic, by the way, that name ain't just for show. Is facing a whisper campaign of blackballing, harassment, threats, and ostracism. His crime? Exposing the institutional sexism of the SFF short fiction field. On 8 September, John De La Rose published a blog post highlighting the rampant misandry within the premier SFF magazines. He discovered that nearly every magazine was biased against men. 2.8% of female submissions were published, but only 0.8% of male submissions were given the nod. Which, you know, yeah. He's not wrong. He's legit not wrong. Like, his data checks out. Kat Rambo, which I have no idea how somebody like that got a name that cool, but Kat Rambo, the president of the Science Fiction Writers of America, decried the report as quote-unquote alt numbers and turned on him. Previously, she was on cordial terms with De La Rose, but after he published the article, she immediately turned hostile. In a clear violation of SFWA rules, she used SFWA's Twitter account to tag John to discredit the post. Quote, I of course messaged SFWA and they did not care, end quote, De La Rose said in an online interview. A week later, John offered to host her on a YouTube show to patch things up. Instead, Rambo threatened to sue him for harassment if he ever contacted her again. Where have we heard this shit before? To De La Rose, it was the last straw. Quote, that being a war declared, I started memeing about her and Mean Girls, De La Rose said. She started Facebook messaging, calling me a harasser as if I attacked her, and stirring up industry professionals against me, end quote. Messages started pouring in across social media calling him a harasser, with some originating from people who get published in the big mags like Analog. These are the same magazines whose sexist practices he exposed. A former editor of Clark's World took things one step further, calling De La Rose on FaceTime to berate him and his writing. Very bizarre, De La Rose remarked. I don't know him. The harassment campaign continued to escalate. A troll posted on his website with information about his children. His children! While others did the same on Twitter. Yeah, that fucking happened. These psychopaths went after his children. So far as I know, John reported it to the police, and I don't know what happened since then. I haven't talked to him about it, but yeah, that fucking happened. These immoral sons of bitches went after his fucking kids. Rambo never disavowed that, De La Rose said. De La Rose has since deleted the offending comment, and Twitter has suspended the doxers. Throughout this ordeal, De La Rose has received messages demanding he should make a public apology. As the Whisper campaign continued, former friends distanced themselves from De La Rose, unfriending and blocking him on Facebook. Among them are industry professionals and editors, including those who work at Bain, previously the only major SFF publishing house that strives to remain apolitical in its publication decisions. They're not the only one. They're not the only one. We do. At Dimension Bucket Media, we do not care what your politics are. We don't even really care what the politics of the story are. If it's a good story, we'll publish it. We can't do advances because we're small and we're poor, but we give you like 75% royalties. So if you're looking for a place to publish that just does not fucking care about your politics, get in touch via the contact form on the blog. If you've got a good story, then we can publish it for you. That is if you don't want to go indie. Which means we'll take care of the, you know, cover and editing and stuff like that. De La Rose believes social justice warriors applied pressure on them to isolate him. Quote, a person who worked for Bain told me he received messages warning him about being my friend, De La Rose said. A Whisper campaign of this magnitude is deliberately designed to isolate and pressure the target into admitting defeat and threaten everyone who supports him. For an independent author like John De La Rose, who depends heavily on social media to sell and market his books, this campaign is a threat to his writing career. John De La Rose is not a troll. Well, okay, hang on. He is. He is, but he's mostly serious. Occasionally he will troll, like that whole, like, leading Hispanic voice in science fiction thing. I think it's true, but John is a friend of mine, so I'm not exactly a good judge. He's the leading Hispanic voice in science fiction so far as I'm concerned, but he does like to troll people occasionally. While his communication style is upfront and direct, he has always comported himself in a sincere and friendly manner. This is also true. This is also true. Us in the Pulp Rev, we have a long-standing hatred of John Scalzi, and we ream him all the fucking time. I'm shocked I have not been blocked by the guy yet. Well, I might have been. I might have been at this point. Let me check. He hasn't blocked me yet. Shocking. He also enjoys pie, apparently. But yeah, he hasn't blocked me yet. Weird. But yeah, he actually was very friendly to all these people. Whenever he's talking to somebody seriously and not, you know, doing trollish shit, like claiming that he's bigger than he is and stuff like that, which, I mean, by the way, fake it till you make it, dude. But he's very friendly with people, and he never gives people a reason to hate him. So this is entirely 100% ideological. I forgot to get another beer. There we go. Whenever he comes into conflict with someone, his first reaction is to attempt to bury the hatchet. That is also true. John is a very nice guy, and he always attempts to give these people, you know, a way to resolve the conflict that they are experiencing. In addition to his offer to Rambo, De La Rose also entered into a spat with SFF author John Scalzi. De La Rose publicly offered to have dinner with Scalzi and later to watch a baseball game together in an attempt to reconcile their differences. Scalzi ignored both authors. All of this is true. I watched John do this, and he talked to me about it, and I was like, dude, if you want to go and try and make nice with John Scalzi, be my fucking guest, but he's not going to listen to you. He is full SJW, man. He is not going to act friendly to you, especially with this much industry pushback on you. But hey, you know, be the bigger man. Be the bigger man. Offer an olive branch. Try and smooth things over if you can. if Scalzi agrees to it, I'll give him fucking credit where it's due. You know, hey, he buried the hatchet. Good for him. Good for John Scalzi. I don't really like the dude's writing, but, you know, he's not a complete and total shithead. He tried to be nice. The SFF community was once a big tent where people of all backgrounds could come together to celebrate a shared love for wonder and adventure. Now, a den of vipers has infested the tent, driving out everyone who disagrees with them. John De La Rose is merely their latest target. The moment you question the narrative, they will turn on you and everyone you know. These harpies and backbiters will stop at nothing to destroy your reputation, your friendships, and you. Ben's not wrong. Ben's very much not wrong. This is something that we have grown very familiar with over the past year or two, as Brian Niemeyer has gotten bigger and John De La Rose has gotten bigger and more successful. Yeah, these people are evil. They're bad. They're mean. They're nasty. They're not good people. Cat Rambo's silence is deafening. The behavior of the SJWs driving this mob is damning. By word and deed, by silence and treachery, they have shown that they are not interested in civilized conduct. All they want is to hang on to their crumbling empire as the seas of change relentlessly batter their strongholds and to drive off everyone who isn't one of them. The response to such behavior is simple. We will replace them. And he's right. We will, and we are. If you want to support John De La Rose through this trying time, you can pick up a copy of his Amazon Top 10 best-selling novel Star Realms Rescue Run, his Dragon Award-nominated novel for Steam and Country, and new novella Gravity of the Game, which I will link to all of these in the description. John's a very good writer. And he actually gave me a free copy of The Gravity of the Game, which is about baseball on the moon, which I'm not a sports guy. I do not get swingy stick. The last thing I had to do with sports was I was over at a friend's former coworker's house. A friend who was a former coworker. And this was back when I smoked pot, like fucking 8 years ago. But we sat there and we watched a football game and smoked weed and talked music. That was the last thing that I had to do with sports. The last thing that I had to do with sports that I actually enjoyed the sports portion of was watching Angels in the Outfield. Which, you know, hat tip to you if you fucking, if you get that reference, if you've seen that fucking movie. When I was a little kid, we had a copy on VHS at my grandmother's house. Very good movie. I liked it. I probably would revise my opinion of it if I watched it again. It probably wasn't all that great, but I liked it when I was a kid. It was a good movie. But yeah, Gravity of the Game looks really cool, and I'm going to be reading that and doing a review of it. I also want to review for Steam and Country, which I bought. Because I love John and I want to support him, and the novel sounds really fucking cool, and it's getting rave reviews too. Star Realms Rescue Run has also gotten rave reviews, so I will be linking to all of these if you want to go support John. They will be non-affiliate links. You can go down there and you can buy them and go help John out, because he honestly is a really, really fucking hardworking guy. He writes a lot. He pumps out like 2K words per writing session. It's fucking ridiculous. Like, I'm in a Discord with him and a couple of other chats, and he frequently drops, you know, hey, I just got done writing 6,000 words. I'm up to 52K now. And I'm just sitting here like, motherfucker. Can you stop making the rest of us look bad for not having time to write? No, John's great. And he's a really hard worker and he's a really good writer. So I highly recommend that you guys go pick up his work, go and support a dude doing it outside the modern conventions and actually standing up to the people who are ruling the roost in science fiction and fantasy publishing right now. He's a good man and he deserves your support. Meanwhile, Benjamin Che, whose profile I will link to, has a couple of serials up on Steemit, and you should go check those out. The current one is Invincible. And he got some really, really fucking good artwork for it. Hang on. Let me just... Aw. It won't load the page. That's sad. Let me see if I can find it via his profile. It's right here. Steemit's basically a social media blogging platform with a cryptocurrency. I have no idea why this isn't fucking loading for some... Oh, I'm not logged in. I guess my login expired or something. Let me try Oh, God damn it. Steemit is currently unable to handle this request. They must be going through a ding-dong-diddly-dang thing. Let me try just going to Steemit. Yeah, Steemit's down for some reason. When it comes up, I will link to... But hopefully they'll get it back up in the next couple of days. I will link to Benjamin Che's profile. and will link to his stories that are currently up on Steemit. You should all go check this guy out. He's got a novel out by Castalia House, too, called No Gods, Only Diamonds. Not diamonds like on a wedding ring, but diamonds like the archaic spelling of demons. D-A-I-M-O-N-S. And the cover art is brilliant. It's, oh god, I want a poster of that fucking book cover. But since Steemit seems to be down currently, we will go and do the rest of the sponsors and then sign off, because it's been 2.5 fucking hours and I have rambled entirely too much in this podcast. Spent a fucking hour and a half on Cuphead, for God's sake. Okay, so, once again, these are the affiliate accounts and the guys who help me out by giving me work and also being very understanding. So first up, we have Aaron Clary. Aaron Clary is America's older brother. He is the world's only professional asshole. And you can find him at captaincapitalism.blogspot.com, as well as his consulting business at assholeconsulting.com. No, that is not a joke. His website is assholeconsulting.com. There you will be able to pay him monies. He requires cash, or at least currency, for advice. Mostly life advice. He's not a lawyer, he cannot give you legal advice, but he is a former banker and economist who has had a pretty fucking crazy life, to be honest. Like, reading some of his books where he talks about the experiences that he's had over the course of his life is just like, wow, dude. But if you're looking to get some information on pretty much anything that you could think of that's not legal advice, should I date this girl? Should I go to the Bakken oil fields and open a bar? Should I major in this in college? Should I do this thing? Whatever. You can go there and you can pay Aaron a nominal fee. I think it's $25 on average for an email consultancy and $35 for a video consultancy, and he will help you get your shit straight. No bullshit, no back padding, no tugging your dick, none of that stuff. He will give you the absolute straight fucking dope. So if you're looking to unfuck your life or prevent your life from being fucked up, go talk to Aaron at Asshole Consulting. He also has his blog, as I mentioned, captaincapitalism.blogspot.com, where he does a lot of writing, and he has several books, a few of which I have done the audiobooks for. So if you're looking for the ones that I did the audiobooks for, we have Poor Richard's Retirement, which is how you, yes, you, can achieve feasible retirement in today's economy for far less than anyone will tell you that you need via minimalism. So if you've read Cappy's other books, then this isn't exactly new information, but it does have some good info in there about retirement that, for example, I didn't know when I read the book for him. And I learned a lot reading the book. So I highly recommend that. It's pretty cheap. It's like $7 for the audiobook. And I don't make royalties off of this. Cappy paid me a flat rate. But he pimps me every week in his podcast, and I figured I might as well go ahead and pimp him in mine. Just, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. He also got me my fucking start in doing audiobooks professionally. So, as opposed to just like auditioning for stuff on ACX. So I want to return the favor, and if I can get some people to go check Aaron out and read his books, then I will consider my good deed done for the day. Another book for him that I did the audiobook for is Enjoy the Decline, Accepting and Living with the Death of the United States, which is exactly what it says on the tin if you're worried about the way that the country is going right now, whether you be on the left or the right. This book has a lot of good information in it that will help you to adjust your mindset so that you're able to better handle the stress of living in what amounts to the end times for America. This book informed a lot of my personal philosophy as well, and I was honored to be able to record the audiobook for it. I really enjoyed that one. That one's my favorite book by Aaron. I read that, oh god, I bought a copy of that back when I first found him. He used to advertise on Honey Badger Radio back when they were just starting out, and that was how I found Aaron. And I heard about his book, and I figured, fuck it, I'll go and pick up a copy. Turns out to be one of the best decisions of my life. Go and buy that book. Even if you don't get the audiobook, it's available in Kindle, paperback, and audio. Most of his books are. I think all of them are, actually, except for the Captain Capitalism Top Shelf and Captain Capitalism Reserved, which are available in paperback and Kindle. But those are fucking huge. It's like an aggregation of his blog posts. The other one that I did the audiobook for is Reconnaissance Man. So this one's more for the younger set, so if you're out there and you don't really know what you want to do after high school, or if you're older and you don't know what you want to do with your life right now, you feel like you've wasted your life, this book will help you figure out what you want to do, where you want to live. It's good personal philosophy. It's not precisely self-help. I wouldn't classify it as self-help, because a lot of self-help books just feed you this line of bullshit, and Aaron is no nonsense. He's not going to pat you on the back and tug your dick and pretend that everything's going to be okay. No, there's hard decisions that you have to make, and this will equip you to be able to make those decisions properly and not fuck your life up completely. And it's cheaper than an asshole consulting session. Also, he got in touch with me a day or two ago. I want to say yesterday, maybe. And he wanted me to bring up Curse of the High IQ, which is a book that I bought when it came out. And it's basically about how having a high IQ can kind of fuck you up. Pretty much, this book developed out of him noticing that a lot of his friends are kind of miserable people. Not like, you know, oh, they're horrible to be around, you just never want to hang out with this guy kind of shit. But just like, you know, one guy's an alcoholic, and, you know, one guy is just, like, completely broken over the way that the country is going, and, you know, other shit like that. They're just, one chick isn't able to find a man that meets her standards and stuff like that. So he was like, hey, all of you guys, go take IQ tests. And they all went and took IQ tests, and the one common denominator with all of these people who were miserable was they had a high IQ. And he goes about this process in the book of describing how, you know, people with a high IQ just are not built for normie life. Like, the way that society is set up is to cater to, if not necessarily the lowest common denominator, the next best thing. So people with really high IQs have trouble functioning in a society that's basically built to cater to stupid people. So if you think that there's something wrong with you, if you think that you're stupid, if you think that you're having trouble in school because you're just not able to focus, or, you know, you have ADD or whatever, go pick up this book, get your IQ tested. It might explain a few things. It explained several things to me. Like, I went and read this book, and I recommended it to the rest of the guys in Dimension Book at Media, or at least Chris and Connor. And we all went and took an online IQ test. It wasn't one of those proctored IQ tests, like one of the big things that'll give you, like, super accurate results. But it's one of those kind of like ballpark estimates. And we all came up, like, I want to say the first or second standard deviation above the average. So, yeah, and Christopher Warren was telling me that this book actually explained a whole shitload about why he was so miserable in school, and, you know, why he felt like he was inadequate, or he felt like he was having problems connecting with other people. It was just, the guy's just got a high IQ. And nobody really teaches you how to deal with that. So, Curse of the High IQ, it's in audio. I did not do the audiobook for this one. I would have loved to, but I got in touch with Aaron after this one came out. I got in touch with him when he published Reconnaissance Man. So yeah, if you think you're stupid, you know, or you have depression or ADD or whatever, go check this book out. It might help you out. Like I told him on Twitter in DMs, is like, you know, I don't know why I never thought to bring this fucking book up to the people that listen to this podcast and read my website, because we're all fucking nerds, and nerds usually have pretty high IQs, so recommending this book to a room full of nerds seems like second fucking nature. But apparently I'm too retarded to get that, or I'm too scatterbrained, or I have too much brain damage, or whatever. I do have a seizure disorder, so maybe I am brain damaged. I don't know. Not epilepsy, but it's like a brain chemical thing. Whatever. It's not important. Long as I take my meds, I'm okay. But yeah, go check out Aaron. Go check out his books, especially Curse of the High IQ. For the people that listen to this podcast, it might be a big help. It was to me. It was to Chris. So, highly recommended book. Next up, we have John E. Boyle. John is an author. He has written a sword and sorcery fantasy set among the Hittites at the end of the Bronze Age. And it is very good stuff. I'm in the process of editing this right now. Doing the audiobook for it. He hired me to do the audiobook, and he was very understanding about my problems that I was having in the first half of this year with the move and the whole, you know, going blind thing. He's a very kind man, and I really do appreciate his patience with me and the various life problems that I was having at the beginning of the year. Because, like, finding out that you're going blind is really scary. Like, really, really, really fucking scary. Especially when the doctor's like, oh, you're going blind. Here, go see this specialist in a week. And you have to sit there and it's like, how much is my vision going to deteriorate while I'm waiting to see the specialist? Very, very scary stuff. It locked me up for like a good 2 months. And John was very understanding of that. And I appreciate that. And that's why he gets a spot in the sponsor role. And that will be to John in the next couple of weeks here. So keep an eye out. Probably around November, this audiobook is going to be coming out, because Amazon has to do their thing where they fucking validate the files and shit like that. There's a wait here. But beyond John's patience and good-heartedness, he actually wrote a really fucking good book. I really enjoyed it. I really loved this book. It was one of those that I'm very happy to work on. I'm very honored to work on it. Queen's Air is huge, but it's just action fucking packed, guys. Like, every chapter has some kind of serious drama or action. All of the chapters read like little short stories. Very good progression. It's told from the perspective of the guy at the end of his life, and he's like, well, this is my journey and how I became the guy and shit like that. And it's got swords, it's got sorcery, it's got demons, it's got werewolves, it's got fucking fictional races like elves and darklings, who, to my knowledge, is a completely original race that John came up with here. I've never seen anything like them in fiction that I've read, in fantasy that I've read before. It also has romance. If you're into the romance in Queen's Air is very good. Very chaste, too. It's not one of those, oh, we met and we fucked and then we fell in love. It's no. He met this girl, and through the course of, you know, talking with her and adventuring with her for a little while, they fell in love with one another, and they kind of married themselves, and then they had to split up because the Empire is after this guy, and he communicates with her through mirrors and stuff via magic over the course of the book. Very good stuff. Loved the romance. Can't wait to see where it goes, because the novel ends on a fucking cliffhanger, and I'm probably gonna go and buy the goddamn book just because I want to find out what fucking happens. But yeah, you should all go check out Queen's Air. You can find a link on the right-hand side of the blog in between the Cat Kimbridge audiobooks and Aaron Clary's audiobooks, and it will take you right to the Amazon store page. It's fucking $5 on Kindle. It's like 40 chapters, got 6 appendices. He explains everything. It's really, really good. It's really well written. He takes inspiration from guys like Edgar Rice Burroughs and Robert E. Howard, which comes across in the writing very clearly. And explains, honestly, why I like this book so much. But yeah, it's a really good book. I'm happy to be doing the audiobook for it, not just because John is a really nice guy and he's paying me, but because it's a really good book, and you guys honestly should go and buy it. It's really good. It's worth your time, even if you don't want to wait for the audiobook. Next, we have the affiliate accounts. So the way the affiliate accounts work is that you click this link, it takes you to the website, you buy whatever you want, and then it doesn't cost you anymore, but the website gives me a kickback from their cut of the profits for driving traffic to their website. So if you want to buy anything on Amazon.com, we have the affiliate account for Amazon. So if you want to go buy your nose hair trimmers, Cappy keeps talking about how you're going to need nose hair trimmers. I'm not even 30, so I haven't run into this problem yet. But if you want to buy nose hair trimmers, you can go and get them on Amazon if you want to buy a hobbyist still. If you want to buy some of these amazing books that I keep fucking telling you guys about, you can look them up on Amazon through the affiliate account. And then I and the author and you, all three, win. You get a good story, I get paid for sending traffic to Amazon, and the author gets paid for their fucking hard work writing these books, because writing books is not easy. Especially fiction books. Like, I don't know the process with nonfiction, like how Aaron Clary does his stuff, but I can't imagine it's a whole lot easier. But the authors deserve to be paid for their work, and you would be helping both of us out if you would use the affiliate account. Next up, we have mycomicshop.com. So if you need anything comic books, not Marvel or DC, well, they have Marvel and DC comics. If you want to get older stuff, or if you want to investigate the used market, I highly recommend mycomicshop.com. I've been using this website for like 2-3 years before I got the affiliate account with them. And I've never had a bad experience with this website, guys. They have quality comics. The comics always arrive in good shape. They always arrive on a timely fucking basis. It's an all-around awesome fucking service. I highly recommend it. And if you would go through my affiliate account and buy your stuff, be it anything, they have all kinds of shit. Like, I found Alterna Comics on there, the relatively unknown, like, indie publisher. Like, Alterna Comics is kinda to comic books what Castalia House is to regular science fiction and fantasy publishing. Not with the same, like, ideological bent that people like Vox Day have, but they're out there doing their own thing, and they're having a lot of fun, and they're publishing some really good stuff. So if you want to investigate Image, or IDW, or Valiant, or Alterna, or Top Cow, Kung Fu Comics, whatever, all of this stuff that, like I say, they do have Marvel and DC too. If you're still completely cucked and you want to go and give money to people that hate you, you could do that. I'm pretty sure they have Doug Tenable's work up too, which is someone that I cannot fucking recommend enough. Let me go and check. Doug Tenable. All they have is Power Up for some reason, which looks cool. It's not in stock, unfortunately. Let me look up Bad Island. Bad Island is really good. Yeah, they have Bad Island, so it's... Yeah, like, you're probably going to have to go look up a list of his comic books, but all of them are fucking great. Doug Tenable is a brilliant comic maker. He does writing, and he does the art, and it's all great. I love the dude's art style. Like I say, I pre-ordered his game Armacrog, just because I played Skull Monkeys, and I played The Neverhood, and I've read his comics, and I love the dude's work. I played Earthworm Jim. He's the creator of Earthworm Jim, by the way. So if you want to go get comic books by that guy, then you can look him up on mycomicshop.com. All very, very good stuff. Next up, we have rightstuffanime.com. So if you're looking for anything related to anime, and a friend of mine actually went and looked, and yeah, they do have body pillows. Their selection isn't great, but they have body pillows. But if you're looking for anything related to anime or manga, this is where you want to fucking go. This is where I go. Like I say, this is mycomicshop.com. I went there for like 2 years before I found out that they had an affiliate program, and then I signed up for it. But this is where I go to get all of my anime DVDs. This is where I go to get my manga. They have Nendoroid figurines. They have drama CDs. They have music CDs. They have Nendoroid figurines. They have the Gundam figurines. They have porn. There's porn there. There's hentai and actual real life, like live human beings fucking porn. So I don't judge. Go and pick that up if you want. I'm not even sure that I can see what people buy when they use the affiliate account. I haven't looked because I'm not interested. I don't care what people buy. It's not a concern of mine what you guys go and buy. Like, you're talking to the guy who bought off eBay a limited edition JoJo's Bizarre Adventure body pillow that has Joseph Joestar on one side and Caesar on the other. You know, I don't have a body pillow to go with it, but I have the cover. I have the case. The body pillows are actually not as expensive as I thought they would be, like the actual pillows themselves. The cases are really fucking expensive, but the body pillows themselves, like, you can get them at Walmart for like $9. They're really not as expensive as I thought they would be. So I am in no position to judge anybody on what they buy on any website that I send you to. And in my defense, I was super drunk on like tequila that night. And somebody showed me the thing and I had the fucking money and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to buy this body pillow. Or this body pillow cover. I keep it folded up because it was actually really expensive and I don't want it to get all fucked up and dirty and shit like that. So I keep it like in a drawer. And I'm too lazy to go and actually buy the fucking pillow for it. It was an impulse decision, and I'm not precisely proud of myself, but I'm not ashamed either. So I don't really know what that amounts to. Point is, I will not judge you if you go on to Red Stuff Anime and buy porn. I'm in no position to. I'm about as full fucking degenerate as you can get. Next up, we have Project Wonderful. If you want to advertise on the blog, but you do not want to spend a lot of money, then you can go to Project Wonderful, and it's not premium ad space. It's not great ad space. But it's there, and it's a 24-hour deal, so you go in and you can pay literally pennies. You're going to have to look me up. I'm under JimFear138 Audio Productions, because my shit has been delisted due to low performance, which doesn't exactly, you know, like, it makes sense. I can't really argue with them about that, because I shill it like this. But, it's a bidding thing, so if somebody comes in and they bid more money than you, then they can kick you off of the ad space and get their own little 24-hour block, unless somebody comes and bids them out. But if you want to advertise on the blog and you don't want to spend a lot of money, you can do it like that. However, if you actually want to advertise on the blog, then you can get in touch with me via the contact form on the left-hand side of the blog. And for $20 a month, you will get a post on the website, premium ad space, posts on all of my social media that I can remember having. I have a shitload of them, and it's really hard to keep track of everything. I'm a scatterbrained nitwit, like I keep saying. But you will also, if you want, you will get a video for YouTube and VidMe and BitChute that will specifically advertise your thing. And throughout the month, I will periodically remind people via social media that, hey, this guy's paying me money to advertise his stuff. You should go check it out. I will also include you in the sponsor role on the podcast for 4 podcasts, at least a month's worth of podcasts. You know, sometimes I fall off for a week, but that won't impact your ad space. You will be there for 4 podcasts. Next up, we have the Bandcamp, which, like I say, you're going to want to watch this space. The only thing that I have up there right now is some old narrations from, like, 2014 when I had a shitty mic and shitty audio quality. But there's stuff up there that isn't on my YouTube channel, so if you're some kind of freak completionist and you want to get all of my narrations, then you can find them over there. And in the future, there will be actual good quality audiobooks going up over there. So keep an eye on that. Last but not least, we have audio commissions. If you want me to read your thing, I will read your thing. I do not care what it is. I do not care from genre. Aaron Clary does not quite self-help nonfiction books. Frank Cervi has contacted me about doing his satirical erotica novel, The Bro Next Door. I mainly specialize in speculative fiction, so sci-fi, fantasy, or horror. I do not care. If you want me to read a textbook, I'll read a fucking textbook, dog. I really am not bothered about it. There is a line. There is a line. Like I say, I'm editing Queen's Air right now, and I'm recording Sudden Rescue by John Mollison and Kirsova Issue 5. I also have finally finalized everything with Michael Kingswood to do the first Glimmervale novel. And then after that, John De La Rose is talking about getting me to do the audio for Gravity of the Game, and Brometheus, at the Brometheus on Twitter, has a novel that he's writing and he wants me to do the audiobook for it. Still Glomar is his name. Glomer? I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Mr. X on Twitter. He has a novel that he's writing that he's put out feelers towards me about doing the audio for. Justin K. Knight has a book that I think he wants me to do the audiobook for, and David J. West has been talking about me getting the audio for one of his books done. I think that's it. But yeah, point being, there's a line. So if you don't mind waiting a few months, then, you know, it's not a big deal. I'll record your thing. If it's a novella, a short story, whatever, you know, I don't have a problem with whatever you bring me. Just if it's larger projects, it's going to take a while. You know, something quick like Cappy's Poor Richard's Retirement, I can get that done in about 4 days, you know, under a week for that kind of book. But for bigger projects, it's going to take a while. And, you know, the people that have already come to me have priority. So, but yeah, there are 2 ways that we can go about this. The first is the flat rate, which means you're hiring Dimension Bucket Media. So there is a $150 per completed hour charge for me narrating and editing the book. And there is a $50 charge for our professional level audio mastering at Dimension Bucket Media, as well as an optional fee for original, never before heard anywhere music specifically designed for your book for the opening and ending credits. And for an extra $15, if you want the music, we can do chapter transitions, but that's entirely up to the author or the publisher, depending on who gets in contact with us. But if you still want your book read, but you can't afford the flat rate, then I have a royalty option via ACX, which I use ACX because they arbitrate everything and nobody has to do any hard math except Amazon. So if you can't afford the flat rate, but you still want your thing read, I will read it for royalties if you don't mind me taking a cut of your profits in the audiobook for the foreseeable future, until Audible isn't a thing anymore. But yeah, just get in touch via the contact form on the right-hand side of the blog, and we will get all of that shit ironed out. All right, and that is the end of the podcast. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope I didn't bore you with the fucking video game talk for way too fucking long. I hope you will go and check out our sponsors. My sponsors. I don't know why I say our. I guess it's just like a natural reaction, but I'm the only one doing shit around here. I'm literally the only person involved here. It's just me. There's no R. Like, I'm gonna... I don't quit talking into this microphone and then export and send it off to somebody for... No, I'm gonna quit talking into this microphone and then go edit this fucking podcast. So there's no us, there's no R. It's me. My sponsors, who all I really appreciate. Thank you all very much. And I guess I will see you guys next week. Peace out, fam.